Why are we spending money?
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
Sunday, November 10, 2024. This is your award-winning Cuba Nation Media Assassination, episode 1711.
This is No Agenda.
Dusting off the DMZ and broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country right here in FEMA Region Number 6. In the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where we've all concluded that the worst television show in the history of television is The Masked Singer. I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
Well, I'm glad you prepped that one. You don't actually watch that drivel, do you?
I can't watch it. Let me give my imitation of the show. Here's that Chinese gay guy. Oh, my God. Here is Jenny McCarthy. Oh, my God. And here's the other person that's on the show. Oh, my God. That's it. That's the show.
How come these people never say, oh, my Satan? It's always interesting to me.
Well, they wouldn't let that happen.
No, they wouldn't let that happen. Hey, friend of the show checked in. As you know, the mainstream media is calling this the podcast election. It is. It's a podcast election. Yeah. Go podcasting. And friend of the show checks in, Nigel Farage.
A big shout out to Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak. I tell you what, the podcast world is really happening. Theirs, of course, is No Agenda. And we've just had the podcast election. That probably in the end is what got Trump over the line. And unlike legacy media, these guys present heavy stuff, very, very light and very, very accessible. And good luck, guys, because I tell you what, everything is changing so blooming quickly. It is amazing. The power of the podcast.
How about that, huh?
Yeah, who's John C. Dvorak?
Well, that's just how he pronounced it. This was producer Paul in the Netherlands. Hopped on Cameo and paid for Nigel Farage to do that for us.
I don't know what to make of it. I think that, thanks, Paul.
Yeah.
I wonder if it has any subconscious effect on Nigel Farage where he'll remember the No Agenda show.
Oh, yeah. Maybe
he'll blurt it out in some situation.
He'll be donating. He'll be donating. I think this is great. We should have all kinds of friends of the show. I still want Kenny G, but he's a high ticket item.
No, he's too expensive.
$300.
You can buy all his albums tenfold over and for less money.
Yeah, and I think in
future, just get an impersonator.
No, I like the real. It's video, by the way. I'm going to post it on the socials. There's video of Farage doing this.
Oh, good. I can repost it. I'm going to tweet it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you should tweet that, baby. I think it's great. We need all kinds of friends of the show. Since you can buy them for $50.
Yes, the new FOS segment.
Friend of the show. It's the best ever. Well, let me just stick with the podcast election so we can get it out of the way. And by the way, I'm with you that may be a little bit overblown, but the more the mainstream media talks about it,
The more
M5M talks about it, the more true it becomes. That's what's great about it.
This is that's how it works.
I like
they're digging their own grave.
So here's CBC on the podcast election with a fabulous American lady from Vox.
Rebecca Jennings is a senior correspondent covering online culture for Vox. Rebecca, good morning.
Good morning.
We heard Dana White name some names there. When we are talking about these podcasters and influencers who are shaking up the political ecosystem, who are the big players?
Isn't this great? This is
we're
so
shaking
good.
Things up.
Shaking it up, baby.
Yeah, I think they kind of named him, right? It's like Joe Rogan, obviously, like the king of this kind of content that appeals to young men who are, you know, just asking questions and are curious about, you know, alternative media.
Now, I have to stop because you will hear this lady do an analysis. I know more women that listen to the Joe Rogan podcast than I do men. She is so wrong about this.
This is the stereotype. This stereotyping. This is Bad journalism.
Yeah, there you go. That's what we're looking for.
That's the word I'm looking for.
Bad journalism.
Yo Vaughn, he's a podcaster, former reality star, just like kind of a comedian guy. Aiden Ross is, you know, a Twitch streamer. The Nelk boys are these kind of YouTube pranksters. They're very similar to like the Paul brothers, Jake and Logan Paul, who people are probably also familiar with. They're very
Oh my God.
Vogel Fry.
I think the more she talks crap, the more the fry gets turned up in her case.
They're very similar to like the Paul brothers, Jake and Logan Paul, who people are probably also familiar with. They're very into
I can't handle it.
Boxing and pranking and these kind of just like outlandish, distasteful.
What's happening here is, so she's from Vox, you know, she's a journalist, you know, she's professional. She knows what she's talking about. Blah, blah. She's, her next stop is NPR. So we have to discredit all of this. Theo Vaughn, oh, he's just a comedian. Yeah, Joe Rogan, just a bit of the young guys, fighters, mushrooms. And they've never watched. They've never watched any serious discussion that any of these pranksters have had with anybody of any stature. This is the bias that exists amongst people who are just biased and never have even decided to have a look. You know, when you're talking to, okay, not my, just an example, but when you're talking to, what's his face from the two brothers with the, you know, the guy who has the podcast with Heather.
Weinstein.
Yeah, Weinstein. That's not a prankster episode. Joe Rogan has scientists and, you know, psychologists and all kinds of people on the show. Is that pranking, fighting nonsense? This woman has never even watched the Joe Rogan or Theo Vaughn or any of these shows.
Boxing.
And Theo, by the way, Theo Vaughn's about as far away from pranksterism or even comedy that you can get.
Well, he is a stand-up comic, but the show is not about stand-up comedy. It's baffling.
Very into like
boxing. Oh my God, her voice is gonna crack.
And pranking and these kind of just like outlandish, distasteful videos where they kind of like poke back at mainstream culture.
How popular? I mean, Joe Rogan is the most popular podcaster in the world. Beyond that, how popular are these people?
I love this. There's no actual factual chart of numbers that people can compare one to the other. Maybe advertising companies have some kind of idea, but still, there's no one place. There's no Nielsen's for podcasting, but okay, Vox lady.
I mean, these are all really, really, really recognizable faces.
They're all really, really, really recognizable faces to
most young people. They are influencers with millions and millions of followers on many different platforms. They are like kind of omnipresent online figures. So yeah, they're very popular. But I think to a lot of people that are not in those same algorithms, like older people or women, you might have no idea who these people are. And because your algorithm looks completely different.
How do we get into these algorithms? We got to slip into someone's algorithm. This has nothing to do with
talking about.
Has nothing to do with algorithms. You're like, oh, they're only popping because they're in the algorithm to slip into old people that very. You're an old person.
She's confusing TikTok with YouTube with podcasters. She doesn't know. So in other words, just to summarize, she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Correct.
And yet, she is brought on as the expert.
On CBC, no less.
What is it that ties them together? Because they're all doing different things, right? Like the material.
What just happened there?
What happened?
He lost it.
What is it that ties them together? Because they're all doing different things, right? Like
Joe Rogan is living in his head rent-free right now.
The material that they are producing, the content they're producing is not the same across the board.
Yeah, totally. I think what ties them together is that like these are young men, with the exception of Joe Rogan, who are like, they're often in groups of men and they're just like having fun together. And I think that poll is
Stop it. So she's just completely discounting Call Her Daddy, Alex Cooper, Sophia with an F, and I won't say I'd use the phrase, but a ton load of female podcasters that talk about sex mostly, or other things. There's a ton of them. Mm-hmm.
Tons.
She she has that she doesn't recognize it's all a bunch of young guys dudes. Except for old man Joe Rogan.
Old man Joe, he's the exception over there.
Old Joe.
In groups of men, and they're just like having fun together. And I think that pull is really, really strong for a lot of men who feel kind of lonely and left behind.
They're lonely and left behind. Yeah.
Lonely.
I'm so lonely. I need to watch Joe Rogan. I'm left behind.
For a lot of men who feel kind of lonely and left behind. And, you know, they are not explicitly political people. I think a lot of those men would kind of not really consider themselves very political, with the exception of like their Trump endorsements. But like mostly they make content that's about, you know, video games or sports or pop culture, anything like outside of.
No, that's your publication, young lady. That's Vox. That's all Vox does. What is this nonsense? Oh, video game, pop culture. No, there's nothing any. Maybe old man Joe.
Video games or sports or pop culture, anything like outside of politics. But then, you know, these kind of issues like leak into their content.
Is the audience not exclusively men, but is it mostly men? There was polling that was done before the election and people are, you know, kind of sifting through the details of the exit polls showing that men and women 18 to 24 were more likely to identify as conservative. Are women listening to those podcasts in numbers?
Yeah, I think it's possible, but I think generally, like, at least these kind of guys, like, these are
What kind of reporting is this? I don't know. I think it's possible.
I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's young boys who are feel lonely, but it's possible that you think it's women. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's possible, but I think generally with at least these kind of guys, like these are very much targeting, you know, teen boys and men in their 20s. Like this is kind of the demographic that Trump targeted with his media campaign when he went on all these podcasts and YouTube shows where, you know, he talked to these kind of guys that like are reaching this audience that the mainstream media just isn't.
You're not reaching anybody. Okay. So
this is a complete, it's as though she's a spook misdirecting everybody. This whole thing that everything possible. She said was bullcrap.
I hadn't thought about that.
Well, yeah, I know. Yeah.
Here's, so there's a very famous, YouTuber, not the same as a podcaster. I need to point this out. He's not in the podcast apps, doesn't have an RSS feed. He's a YouTuber.
YouTuber
David Pakman has
he's been around
3-4 million subscribers.
To he his, used to be on where's David Pakman? It used to be the David Pakman Show. It used to be the David Pakman Show.
That's
and it used to be shown on one of the cable channels.
Oh really? He's a young guy, relatively.
It
young
was
guy.
Like what it was. It was like there was a cable channel that had all this. It just had a bunch of weird stuff. It's like what we wanted to do.
Yeah, I was going to
still do.
I was going to say it's what our idea was.
It's our idea.
It's our idea.
And they had David Pakman was on this network and. He's just, you know, it was
he's
guy.
He's a left-wing guy.
Yeah, he's totally left-wing. His show followed Amy Goodman. Tom Hartman was another one on the same network.
Oh, what was that network again? Well, that wasn't Air America, was it?
No, it was like Free Speech TV or something like that.
Was that on Pluto?
No, this was on, I had it on a cable system. I think it was on Dish.
Hmm.
And it was, I think it was Free Speech TV, FSTV. It was running during our early episodes of No Agenda, probably 12 years ago.
That's a long time.
I remember getting clips of Thom Hartman all the time because he would, at one point.
What happened to Thom? What happened to Thom?
He's on the radio still.
Yeah, okay.
But he at one point, this was about, again, 12 years ago, he was doing the daily smog report with the particular parts per million in the atmosphere in different cities as though this was a weather report.
Well, we're going to die. I'm going to die. Well, not Thom, but David Pakman. And this is very telling. So we have the rise of the podcasters. Old Joe and prankster Theo. Meanwhile, bad things are happening over in lefty YouTube land.
I'm going to tell you something that is terrifying me.
Terrifying.
I always try to come here and put a positive face on everything, but there is something going on that is terrifying me. When I woke up this morning, we had lost 5,000 YouTube subscribers compared to where we were last night. Now, the first thing I thought was, is this a glitch? We've been on YouTube for 15 years or something like that. And subscribers always just go up. They just never go down. They go up. Is something wrong with my channel? Is someone attacking my channel? What's going on? So I started texting. So now I understand what is going on. It's terrifying, but it is happening. A lot of people are checking out. I heard anecdotally from a couple dozen people who said, you know, David, I just can't do it anymore. I just can't do it. I'm checking out. I'm out. And the reason that this is terrifying, not only because it puts everybody in left-wing media's livelihoods at stake and at risk, it terrifies me because our instinct is the opposite of what the right does, and we will get crushed if this is the way we respond to a defeat.
They're running away. They're giving up. They're capitulating. They can't handle.
Doesn't sound right.
Well, he called a
Let me just throw this at you. I'm a subscriber to something or other, and I just stopped listening to it. I don't go unsubscribe to a YouTube channel. I've never done that.
Well, that's the rage quit mentality. You know, it's like, well, you know, because I never watched David Pakman, but I'm sure he was telling them that Kamala's going to win and she's fantastic. And
I'm sure
and he also mentioned that this was happening across the board. He texted a whole bunch of his other liberal YouTubers.
Generally speaking, there's a bot filter that there's a sweep of bots that they YouTube.
He suggested
Twitter.
This.
Everybody does this.
He suggested this, and he said, "But the a lot of the subscribers were paying subscribers. You know, these days you can join on YouTube, and then you can pay in X amount, and so you get it without commercials, and that's for that show specifically." He said he lost those as well. So these were not just bots. That it wasn't a sweep. He you know, it's a very long episode. This is why I cut it out to get the headline. But it's not that they're leaving.
Good.
Hey, before I forget. So on the last episode, I said the future of media is hyper-local and people should, if you want to do a podcast, don't try to be like old Joe, but just do a podcast for your town. Holy smokes. I have over 50 people saying, give me the primer. How do I do it? How do I get started? I've never had that kind of response to anything.
Well, Mimi's got the thing half written, so you can just take it over.
Well, I actually writ something. I wrote something, and I posted it.
You writ something. I'll send it over to you.
I writ something. Yeah, I'll send it over to Mimi. We should compare notes. That's good.
We'll crank something out within. We'll have it done in 30 days. As long as I'm not doing it.
Another no agenda promise.
Where's our whiskey?
Hey, I want to give you some props, like big props, for correctly analyzing the situation. I need to play one clip before it, and then I'm just going to shower you with props. You know, stage props, all kinds of lovely props. Big, beautiful props. And I'll just play this very quick clip, because there's a lot of talk about Pelosi and what her role, because everyone's trying to blame everybody else. So, you know, what was her role? Who did what? And this is a very kind of chop job 50-second clip of CBS.
Reports that it was Nancy Pelosi who orchestrated a coordinated effort to squeeze President Biden to drop out. Please tell us what you told President Biden to persuade him to step aside.
Well, I've never shared any conversations with the President of the United States publicly, no.
It said that he's furious at you, is he?
Well, he knows that I love him very much.
I understand that you don't want to own this. But it is so well reported that you were the leader of a pressure campaign.
What? No, I wasn't a leader of any pressure party. Let me say things that I didn't do. I didn't call one person. I never called anybody.
Call
what I'm saying is I had confidence that the president would make the proper choice for our country, whatever that would be. And I said that. Such a consequential president of the United States, a Mount Rushmore kind of president of the United States. Want
you
to know
really
what comes next.
That he belongs up there. Lincoln and Joe Biden.
So Pelosi's out there. Everyone saying, no, I had nothing to do with this. No, no, I didn't call anybody. They might have called me, but I didn't call anybody. And by the way, he should be on Mount Rushmore to shut him up because, you know, he's we got to cut Joe down. He's talking too much. Now, to your theory about what happened with Biden and Harris in 20 seconds, go.
Yeah, Biden was being forced to quit. He didn't want to at first, but you had the insiders, namely Pelosi and Schumer and probably some others. And then you had the outsiders, Axelrod and Carville, and they were attacking from outside. And this was going on even, you know, right immediately after the debate. Axelrod and Carville were just all over these, you know, MSNBC, CNN, telling him how he's got to go, he's got to quit, he's got to go, he's got to quit. So the pressure was all over Joe. Joe being, as some people would say, still sharp as a tack underneath his kind of mental disabilities.
Sharp.
And he decided to throw a wrench in the works and said, okay, you're going to do that to me? I'm endorsing Kamala Harris. I quit and I'm endorsing Kamala Harris. He put her right in play immediately and knowing that the Democrats were so caught up in identity politics and she was a woman of color and she was a South Asian and black and a female, they couldn't say no to her. So they had to, especially after bitching and moaning how she was the worst vice president ever. And they all did that. He threw her into the fray and they had to change gears and scramble around and make her the candidate. She could have refused to do it, but she didn't.
John Morgan is a bundler for the Democrat Party, which means he
yeah, the lawyer in Florida.
The lawyer in Florida. Good friends with Joe, and he was interviewed locally. And listen to this.
Kamala Harris ended up taking over for Joe Biden. I've seen you on Twitter. Joe Biden's a friend of yours. Mm-hmm. I know you guys have the same breed of dogs and mm-hmm. you've hung out.
Okay, so, but you were not a fan of how the Democrats handled pushing no. Joe out. But you said at the end of the day, you called it jiu-jitsu, the way it ended up. And I love that. Explain that.
Jiu-jitsu, Joe didn't want to go. Joe's still pissed that he's gone. Joe is pissed, and I'll show you on my phone. I talked to her yesterday for an hour and a half. Joe's pissed at Nancy Pelosi because he saw her as the reason. Mm. And Joe said, you know what? I don't think Nancy Pelosi wants Harris. So guess what? Here you go.
Oh,
really?
That's what I think.
You're just going off. Opinion here.
Sort of. Factual opinions.
Okay. I like that. I'm going to use
evidence-based opinion.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh, it's so intriguing and intriguing. And it's just so interesting.
He did it in a fit. Yeah. He did it on a Sunday morning. He did it in a fit.
Yeah.
And then he.
It's like, here, take it.
Yes.
But he didn't mean it.
He was mad, but he knew, listen, if he didn't do it, she was going to release. They were going to release 100 congressmen and women that were going to say drop out.
That were all going to go against him.
Look, she told Mike Donilon, she said, put Mike Donilon on the phone. That's his speech guy. And she said, your numbers are wrong. Don't forget, these people around him, money for them. Mike Donilon had a huge payout coming for the ad buy. Anita Dunn was moving in and out of the White House. Her husband was a lawyer. Steve Ricchetti's brother's a lobbyist. The gravy train ended that day for all those people. Just boom.
There are a lot of angry people right now.
But man. Look, we couldn't.
Do you think he would have lost, though?
Yes.
Okay.
So at the end of the day, you're kind of glad that he did what he did.
He had to. As James Carville said, that debate, it's like seeing your grandmother naked.
Yeah. There you go. All kudos to you. You nailed it.
Yeah, it was so hard.
Well, I mean, you heard these hosts. What?
I know. It surprises me that anyone's surprised, that's shocked by this.
Yeah.
All they have to do is follow the media itself. The media was on her case about getting rid of her for the second Joe Biden term.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get rid of Kamala. She's a weak link. And there, everybody was on board with that. And then all of a sudden, she's the candidate. Now she's great. What? How does that work? That something's wrong.
Isn't that fantastic? I love it. Now,
well, I want to talk about some more Trump stuff, but can we do a foundational clip here? This is the Trump rap NPR.
Hold on a second. Yes, here we go.
President-elect Donald Trump has won both Arizona, a state Joe Biden won in 2020, and Nevada, according to race calls from the Associated Press. For Nevada, it's the first time in 20 years the state elected a Republican candidate as president, and for Trump, it's a sweep of all seven swing states. That brings his electoral vote count to 312, with 226 for Vice President Harris. Next week, Trump meets with President Biden at the White House. Meanwhile, with his second administration months away, NPR's Ron Elving has more on what his first priorities in office could be.
The tax cuts that were his big legislative achievement in 2017 have to be renewed next year. He'll move quickly on that package. Good news for many of his major backers, as the cuts are heavily weighted to the upper income tier. I may also move fast to begin his big tariff regime against China and others. In essence, these are taxes on imports that may well be passed on to consumers. Oh, yeah. But Trump thinks they will bring jobs back to the U.S.
Okay.
Well, you know, they've been promoting this tax cut thing as somehow, you know, I mean, they did it originally, that the tax cut did benefit everybody.
Oh, definitely.
But they keep promoting it as the rich tax cut for the rich, when it's not.
But they're staying
on message, and they've stayed on message for this since 2015. And I think it's annoying, and I keep hearing it as bothersome. But okay, let's go to part two of this and wrap this. This is the foundation for any other discussions.
And as questions mount about what the next Trump presidency will look like for U.S. relations and rest of parts of the Middle East, focus is also being drawn to Trump's business ties with Gulf states. No. Here's Aya Petrawi.
Trump has personal connections with Gulf Arab rulers.
Oh, no.
And his brand is emblazoned on golf courses and real estate projects across the Gulf, including here in Dubai. But on policy, there are questions on whether he'll be willing or able to end Israel's war in Gaza that's killed tens of thousands of civilians and displaced the population, and if he'll pile pressure on Iran, as he did his first term. Director of the Gulf International Forum, Daniel Thaffer, says Gulf Arab states have ties with Iran now and are focused on growing their economies.
So the maximalist policies of Trump, which he applied during his first term, especially when it comes to Iran, may not be as appealing to the Gulf states.
She says they'd prefer de-escalation.
So that's where we stand.
Well, then let me do a foundational clip of the M5M just before the election, just so we're reminded.
What would a second Donald Trump term look like?
Well, he cannot be the next president.
People would get legitimately elected, and then they would try to do away with elections and do away with opposition and do away with a free press. And you could see it in countries where, well, Hitler was duly elected.
A lot of people have tried to draw similarities between Mussolini and Hitler.
Then a lot of these people that are talking about literal or figurative or whatever the hell they're saying, you gotta look like idiots, because he will execute whoever he's allowed.
Leads me to think there is a coming massive crisis that's going to occur on November 5th.
Is promising crisis to be a dictator for a day.
He is going to really, he runs the risk of really dismantling and greatly incapacitating the Department of Justice and the FBI.
It is just unquestionable at this point that man cannot see public office again. He is not only unfit, he is destructive to our democracy. And he has to be eliminated.
Eliminated! Eliminate him! Eliminate him! Okay, there you go. Now,
yeah, well, that reminds me that since we're going to do a clip showdown, how about this? So here's the one that everyone's passing around. Well, actually, I'll wait for that one. No. This one everyone's passing around. This is the poli-sci professor, and they clipped her and they retweeted her, and she's all over the place. And this is her before the election, gloating. This is the clip's called pre-gloat.
Yes, she's gloating. Pre-gloat, yes.
She's gloating about how, you know, she did She's an expert,
mm-hmm.
and she got into an argument with a clerk, and this guy's a fool.
Arlene, Dr. Arlene, is that who this is?
Is that who it is? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, probably. Yeah.
She's fantastic. She's actually psychotic, which is rather interesting for her vocation.
Okay, so we're closing in on almost 5 p.m. Eastern time, and I've been tracking everything that's been going on across the country today. And my most important encounter was when I went out to get my champagne. I was talking to the guy in the store, of course, asking him, did he vote?
Little minion guy.
He said he did early voting, and he asked me if I early voted. He asked me, you know, why I was getting the champagne. And I said, because I'm going to be toasting Madam President tonight. And he just looked at me with kind of like a smirk on his face. And I said, you know, she's going to win this, right? And he says, oh, well, it's very, very close. And I said, no, it's not. He says, well, what do you mean? I said, no, it's not. The women of America are making their voices heard. Reproductive rights is what it all comes down to. And the women are voting in numbers relative to men that are unbelievable. She's won this. And I said to him, she's going to take every one of the swing states plus Iowa. And he said, oh, but the numbers are so close. I said, I'm a political analyst. I'm telling you right now, the numbers are there. She's taking this election. And then I said to him, you realize, and he didn't tell me who he voted for, but of course I knew. And I said, you do realize you wasted your vote, right? And I didn't care. And I walked out with my bottle of champagne and happily walked home. Bye-bye.
I think someone might need to do a wellness check on Dr. Arlene, make sure she's okay. No,
it turns out that she came back after the election. Did you get this?
No.
She came back after the election, and she's kind of semi-apologetic, but this is what she posted after the election. This is Professor Loser clip.
So, as you know, Kamala Harris did not win the election. As the numbers stand right now, there were 18 million fewer votes than in 2020. And as I said all along, you have to have a huge, huge turnout, and it goes to the Dems. And we didn't have it. And there's going to be a lot of speculating going on about...
Yeah, about you, your numbers.
Everything that happened, everything that was wrong, every decision that was made, every aspect of this whole thing. And the reality is that Kamala Harris ran the most impressive campaign, mounting and running it and having only 3 months in which to do it. It's unprecedented. And it was absolutely magnificent. I've never seen anything like it in my entire life.
So good.
Impressive on a level that, I mean, she has the campaign playbook. If you're going to win, that's the playbook that you use.
There's logic for you.
Well,
if you're going to win, you use her playbook that she lost. Now, there's a couple of, I used one more clip on this series. She said something, and I tried to find this clip because Cenk Uygur had a show where he, before the election, where he brought this guy on. I couldn't get the clip, sorry, but this guy comes on and he's predicting Kamala's going to win, and Cenk's all, oh, great, blah, blah, blah. And the guy mentioned the Iowa analysis that was done. It was a poll in Iowa. One outlier said, oh, Iowa's going big for Kamala.
Mm-hmm.
She, this woman, in her first clip, if you notice, she mentions Iowa. This Iowa thing, which she didn't go, Iowa's never going to go for Kamala Harris, but for some reason, these lefties all believed it was going to be true.
Well, what is the significance? Is that like New Hampshire, where you have to have New Hampshire? If the way New Hampshire goes, the way the country goes, did Iowa become that?
It was significant because Iowa is solidly Republican.
Right.
All the time.
Corn.
And it's never gone Democrat, but somebody figured out some way of messing with the numbers to kind of conclude that, oh, yeah, they're going to be big Democrats. They're going to swing it to the Democrats.
Climate change models. Climate change models.
These.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. These suckers, you know, bought into it. Now, the clip I want to play, which is the one that I didn't play in the last show, but I want to play. This is the election anal series.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the gender gap clip that nobody really likes talking about.
President-elect Trump will be the 47th president of the United States.
We overcame obstacles that nobody thought possible, and it is now clear that we've achieved the most incredible political thing. Look what happened. Is this crazy?
In her concession speech today, Vice President Harris says she accepts the election results, but she vows to fight on. And both Trump and Harris campaigned with the hope that the gender gap would work to their advantage. Trump's campaign focused on men tapping into the economic insecurities and aspirations and making inroads with Black and Latino men, often leaning into hyper-masculine rhetoric. And it worked. But Harris's pitch to women in particular largely focused on abortion rights. That didn't seem to resonate in the voting booth. Center-right pollster Christine Matthews is president of Bellwether Research and Consulting. She says she thought that for the first time since 1976, white women would back the Democratic candidate. But
that did not materialize. In fact, there was really no difference. White women performed as normal. And what I find really, I don't know, difficult to understand, I think, is, you know, both Hillary Clinton and Kamala Harris, two women candidates for president, didn't do anything to change the dynamics of the gender gap.
No, no change. Well, we already
discussed. No change, and everyone's all bent out of shape about that. What's wrong with these white women?
I just want the troll room to know that when John gives me a production cue, that does not mean that the title Election Anal will be a show title. This is this is not going to happen.
Election anal.
So there is some sanity, and I'm happy to see it. Julie Roginski, I think that's how you pronounce her name, is a Democratic strategist, and she came on CNN, and she explained pretty much, I think, the big problem with the Democrat Party, which has nothing to do with all of this nonsense.
No, I'm going to speak some hard truths to my friends in the Democratic Party. This is not Joe Biden's fault. It's not Kamala Harris's fault. It's not Barack Obama's fault. It is the fault of the Democratic Party in not knowing how to communicate effectively to voters. We are not the party of common sense, which is the message that voters sent to us. For a number of reasons, we don't know how to speak to voters. When we address Latino, and language has meaning. When we address Latino voters as Latinx, for instance, because that's the politically correct thing to do. It makes them think that we don't even live on the same planet as they do. When we are too afraid to say that, hey, college kids, if you're trashing a campus at Columbia University because you're unhappy about some sort of policy and you're taking over a university and you're trashing it and preventing other students from learning, that is unacceptable. But we're so worried about alienating one or another cohort in our coalition that we don't know what to say when normal people look at that and say, wait a second, I send my kids to college so they can learn, not so that they can burn buildings and trash lawns, right? And so on and so forth. When we put pronouns after names and say she, her, as opposed to saying, you know what, if I call you by the wrong pronoun, call me out, I'm sorry, I won't do it again, but stop with the virtue signaling and just speak to people like they're normal. There's nothing I'm going to say to Sher Michael that I'm not going to say to you, that I'm not going to say to somebody else. I speak the same language to everybody. But that's not what Democrats do. We constantly try to parse out different ways of speaking to different cohorts because our focus groups or our polling shows that so-and-so appeals to such and such. That's not how normal people think. It's not common sense. And we need to start being the party of common sense again. Joe Biden is not responsible for that. Neither is Kamala Harris. It is a problem that Democrats have had for years. I've been banging the drum on this for, I don't know how, probably 10 years, if not longer on this. We need to get back to being the party of common sense, that people look at us and say, we understand you. We appreciate what you say because you speak our language. And until we do that, we should stop blaming other people for our own mistakes.
Amen, sister. That's exactly right.
Oh, you can talk to your blue in the face. It's not going to change anything. And let me say something about, she did bring something up that I've noticed is cropping up left and right everywhere, because this swing of the Hispanic vote toward the Republicans keeps bringing up this Latinx thing.
Mm.
And it's not, she's not the first one. I saw it this morning. I was watching on Zakaria's show, and he's going on and on about it. I don't know why, you know, everyone gets all bent out of shape because they use Latin X. And yeah, nobody likes it. So whose idea was it?
And, well, that was the whole DEI B ultra woke stuff that just popped up, you know, along with before we get started with the meeting, I want to thank the Lakahani Tuda Tata Tati tribe for the captured lands we stand on.
My favorite. What happened? By the way, I missed that.
Yeah, they're still doing it. But don't worry, it'll pop up. It's still around.
I actually miss it. It's so stupid. And you see somebody going on.
I'm Adam Curry, he, him, I'm wearing a blue dress. I mean, all of this stuff. People got sick of it.
And I think they were always sick of it.
Right, but Trump gave people the license to say, I'm sick of it. That's what happened. We're like, hey, you know what? I'm sick of this nonsense. Stop it now.
He, her. Every time I see it, you know, I'm almost at the point where I get a lot of LinkedIn followers. And when I see that, you know, on LinkedIn, some people will put he, her, they, it, you know, all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I just bounce them if I see it.
But this, well,
I just not tolerable.
You have to, when you log into, you probably, I don't know if you've seen this, but I believe when you log in now, if you haven't set your pronoun, LinkedIn prompts you
to I've set never your seen pronoun. That.
Yeah, someone told me that.
I haven't seen it. I go to LinkedIn and repost the show all the time.
Well, but you're already logged in as a she her. You're already a fake woman.
I'm a she her. Actually, a she it.
On LinkedIn, you're already a she it. We know you're stalking everybody. So I thought it would be kind of maybe interesting if you don't want to do it. But you know, Trump released two videos. And these are his policies. So this is the real project 2025.
It depends on it. Maybe the one, my bonus clip may be part of this series, but play what you're going to play. And then I have some comments about it because I don't think people realize these are old.
Oh, the one about what he's going, how he's going to get rid of the deep state. Is that old?
He did one on free speech.
I saw that one. Yeah.
He did one. The really good one is the one on gender affirming care.
No, I don't have that one. No,
that's the bonus clip.
Well, why don't we do that? Let's do that one first. Is that an old clip?
It's a long clip, but play as much as you feel like, because it's, you know, it's Trump.
Okay,
here.
Here's my plan to stop the chemical, physical, and emotional mutilation of our youth. On day one, I will revoke Joe Biden's cruel policies on so-called gender affirming care. Ridiculous. A process that includes giving kids puberty blockers, mutating their physical appearance, and ultimately performing surgery on minor children.
This, by the way, this actually was a reason for some people to vote independent instead of Trump. So these were progressives who could not agree with Kamala, probably loved old Joe, sharp as a tack. But because of this...
But you mean Joe Biden, not Joe Rogan.
Can you believe this? I will sign a new executive order instructing every federal agency to cease all programs that promote the concept of sex and gender transition at any age. I will then ask Congress to permanently stop federal taxpayer dollars from being used to promote or pay for these procedures and pass a law prohibiting child sexual mutilation in all 50 states. It'll go very quickly.
Now, he can do that, I presume, just like, I mean, aren't these state laws, like driving age, tattoo age, drinking laws, aren't these state laws? Or are there federal laws?
Well, no, he specifically said federal agencies. He can do an executive order to tell federal agencies to stop this, that, and the other.
Okay.
Ooh. I will declare that any hospital or healthcare provider that participates in the chemical or physical mutilation of minor youth will no longer meet federal health and safety standards for Medicaid and Medicare and will be terminated from the program immediately.
Yeah, that's the big one right there. That's the money. He's like, oh, hold on a second. That's not worth it.
Furthermore, I will support the creation of a private right of action for victims to sue doctors who have unforgivably performed these procedures on minor children.
Whoa.
The Department of Justice will investigate Big Pharma and the big hospital networks to determine whether they have deliberately covered up horrific long-term side effects of sex transitions in order to get rich at the expense of vulnerable patients, in this case, very vulnerable. We will also investigate whether Big Pharma or others have illegally marketed hormones and puberty blockers, which are in no way licensed or approved for this use. My Department of Education will inform states and school districts that if any teacher or school official suggests to a child that they could be trapped in the wrong body, they will be faced with severe consequences, including potential civil rights violations for sex discrimination and the elimination of federal funding. As part of our new credentialing body for teachers, we will promote positive education about the nuclear family, the roles of mothers and fathers, and celebrating rather than erasing the things that make men and women different and unique. I will ask Congress to pass a bill establishing that the only genders recognized by the United States government are male and female, and they are assigned at birth. The bill will also make clear the type.
Hold on. Assigned at birth? How about recognized at birth? I think that's a mistake. That's a mistake in the writing.
Congress to pass a bill establishing that the only genders recognized by the United States government are male and female, and they are assigned at birth. The bill will also make clear that Title IX prohibits men from participating in women's sports, and we will protect the rights of parents from being forced to allow their minor child to assume a gender which is new and an identity without the parents' consent.
There you go.
The identity will not be new, and it will not be without parental consent. No serious country should be telling its children that they were born with the wrong gender, a concept that was never heard of in all of human history. Nobody's ever heard of this, what's happening today. It was all when the radical left invented it just a few years ago. Under my leadership, this madness will end. Thank you very much.
Well, okay, so that's good. And I was going to go to a similar type of clip about his deep state policy, but I have to pump the brakes here for a second, because I've learned a little bit about Susie Wiles, who is his chief of staff, announced first female chief of staff ever. But there's a problem with Susie Wiles. In 2022, she signed on and became the co-chair of lobbying firm Mercury Public Affairs.
My understanding is she quit that. She was in a public relations, well, it was a lobbying firm, which she quit in 2019, according to Wikipedia.
Well,
she was never involved with.
So
February, she was working in Florida campaigns during that period.
I'm looking at Mercury right here. Mercury announces top Republican political strategist Susie Wiles as co-chair February 7th, 2022.
Okay.
So, well, so that's,
if that's on their website, it's probably true.
That's bull crap. And if you look at who their clients are, it's Big Pharma.
Yeah.
And it's Gavi, which is Gates' outfit. So, you know,
she doesn't work for him now.
Okay. But it's not like, once again, you've got people in on the inside who I think are questionable.
I think she has to be under scrutiny at this point. But it's like I've always said, because I worked at an oil refinery and then I became an air pollution inspector at an oil refinery. And it doesn't mean I was a corrupt air pollution inspector because I had worked at an oil refinery when it just the opposite was true.
You seem to have a big problem with climate change. I'm a little suspicious now. It seems like you're shilling for big oil.
Yeah, you could be. Yeah, okay.
But you get my point.
Yes, I do get your point.
Because it's not.
But let's get back to this Trump clip. This Trump clip that I played and the ones that the other ones that are out there.
You steamrolled right over the fact that she's from Big Pharma.
No, it's because I'm trying to finish the clip we were talking about.
You finished it already.
No, I didn't get to the point, which is that these clips are old.
You already told us that.
Yeah, but I didn't tell you the whole history of them.
Okay, tell me the history.
They were done in January of 2024 when, as a proposed series of these, he did a bunch of these policy clips when he was planning to go after Joe Biden in January of 2024. And they've reemerged as new clips. If you see any of them on YouTube or anything, it sounds like they just were produced last week. These are old clips.
Got it.
And I think that needs to be known if you're going to play, if anyone's going to be talking about these clips.
Well, I think I got a note saying,
how come nobody's talking about these clips? And I was saying, I can't figure these are great clips. I don't know why they're not talking about them. And so you find out it's because they're old clips.
Susie.
Okay,
Wiles.
Now we can go back to Susie.
No, I got nothing left to say. She's a big pharma lady, and I think it's suspicious. I don't like
we'll
it.
We'll see how it goes.
I don't like it. I don't like it. Well, Musk tweeted the video about Section 230. Was that also old?
Yeah. It's the same set, the same everything. I don't know that Musk knows it was old, but he got a hold of it and it came out. It sounds like it was new, but it's the same part of this because of the set. The set's exactly the same. The voicing's the same. The echo's the same.
Agreed. Well, how can Musk not know? He's hanging out with the president-elect doing conference calls with Zelensky.
Well, he never said it was new. he just played it.
He made it look like, wow, this is important. He made it look like it was new.
Yes, he did. I saw that. That's where I first got turned on to these clips. But this reminds me, there was a clip that Trump did in 2015 before he ran in 2016, which was one of these policy clips that was done about the deep state back then.
Yes.
I had a copy of it somewhere.
I have it. It was a killer. I have it. Let's go through it. Hold on a second. I have it. And you're right. It is old, but I wonder why not a lot was done with it. I'm pretty sure we played it at some point. Let me see here.
I know we both had it. I don't know that.
Here it is. Dismantle the deep state. He has a 10-point plan.
Here's my plan to dismantle the deep
state. Exact same cadence, but this, of course, has some music underneath it because it's a Trump world produced.
Deep state and reclaim our democracy from Washington corruption once and for all. And corruption it is.
You know, we probably didn't play it because they're so long. That's probably the reason we didn't play it, which is a mistake on their part. It's not really clippable.
First, I will immediately reissue my 2020 executive order restoring the president's authority to remove rogue bureaucrats, and I will wield that power very aggressively.
All right, that was what everyone got their, as you would say, tit in a ringer over that. What? You can't fire government employees. There is some law about that, isn't there? Is it really hard to fire government employees?
Yes, it is very hard.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Oh.
Second, we will clean out all of the corrupt actors in our national security and intelligence apparatus, and there are plenty of them.
No, that...
He did none of this, by the way. We should note that.
Whoa, they got six ways to Sunday.
The departments and agencies that have been weaponized will be completely overhauled so that faceless bureaucrats will never again be able to target and persecute conservatives, Christians, or the left's political enemies, which they're doing now at a level that nobody can believe.
So this was 2015?
I think it was right. Yeah, it was 20. I think it was 2015. It was after that. And what he's referring to in that last comment, it was the Lois Lerner thing.
Yeah, the IRS.
Running the IRS against all the conservative.
Well, let's not waste our time with these then, since I didn't realize that was from 2015. I thought it was from the 2020 election.
No, that was old.
Oh, man. Well, let's go.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of this stuff that's out there, and it never, because the mainstream media doesn't report on this stuff.
Right, it never goes anywhere.
They won't give you backgrounders on it. I mean, I had to dig around to figure out that these clips, these recent ones that we both ran into about Section 230 and about the transgender stuff was as old as it was, which explains why it hasn't been discussed much. But at the same time, why does this stuff linger in the background like this, and it was never discussed when it came out?
It's possible that that was the algorithms that the old guard at Twitter were managing. And, of course, we know that at the time, Facebook, you know, everyone's changing their tune a bit. But it was probably suppressed.
That's
the only reason I can think.
Probably. Yeah. Hello.
Now.
Hello.
Now, here's a beautiful little ditty. As now, of course, the promise was within 24 hours, President Trump is going to fix this war in Ukraine. And man, what a doozy. I think the Musk thing, because everyone's like, oh, Elon Musk was on the phone and talking. And to me, it's probably Musk was probably in the office. And Trump is doing this. Hold on a second. I got to fix this war. Hold on a second. And then he said, hey, you talk to Zelensky like your parent or grandparents do. Here, talk to Aunt Dottie, you know.
Yes, say hi.
Yeah, so I don't think he was involved in any negotiations. But in comes a prediction from the show.
And first of all, thank you for having me. And I must say that it is already happening because the talks between Donald Trump and President Vladimir Zelensky already happened, talks on the phone. And I must stress that Elon Musk was part of those talks. It's known that Elon Musk was in contact with the Russian government throughout those past 2 years. So this raises a concern of how Russian government, how Putin's government is now inside the Trump circle. Do they have someone in the Trump circle, in this case, if we can call an Elon Musk a person who can project Russia's interest? So now Europe is trying to gather and realize what can it do to counter this new reality of in the United States. We know that the European Union and the NATO countries have been preparing for Trump presidency for the past year. And of course, we could hear champagne bottles popping in the Kremlin when Donald Trump was elected president. So now everyone expects Donald Trump to hit the ground running, not from day one, but already right now, because he's promised to end the war in 24 hours. And J.D. Vance, then the candidate to be vice president of the United States and now vice president-elect, have told reporters his ideas, his views of how this new peace would be achieved. First of all, this is a demilitarized zone, but a demilitarized zone between Russia and Ukraine on Ukrainian territory. Yes. On Ukrainian territory at the line where two armies are standing right now. This would mean Ukraine losing a quarter or even a third, probably, of its territory.
Exactly what we looked at. Yeah, DMZ, demilitarized zone. End of story. It's done. Why the mainstream media? No wonder it's the podcast election. It's so obvious when you just sit down and don't have coffee with your producers all day. And you just look at the facts on the table and the obviousness of it all.
Obviousness of it all. That's the key.
Obviousness of it all.
At some point, it's obvious.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it's denied. The obviousity is denied.
Because these are not actual journalists and reporters. They are operatives, all of them, especially in state-run media, or at least state-adjacent, like NPR, PBS, and screw it, ABC, BBC. BBC.
And meanwhile, Donald Trump, still in the early days of putting together his administration, he's been on a call with the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, and interestingly, he was joined by Elon Musk.
Interestingly.
What does that say, do you think, about the role that Mr. Musk might play in the government?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? This has been described as a lengthy call between Donald Trump and President Zelensky. And the suggestion is that Elon Musk was clearly in the room for at least a small part of it, and he handed over the phone. You would give your friend the phone to say hello to someone on the other end.
Yes,
and apparently,
exactly.
President Zelensky thanked Elon Musk for the Starlink satellite systems, which have been really crucial during the war in Ukraine, where a lot of the communications have been taken out. As to what it means for Elon Musk's future, well, there's discussion about him having some sort of role in Donald Trump's administration. What that might look like, nobody quite knows. They've talked about, something a bit new, something different, maybe leading a new Department of Government Efficiency where he would cut costs and slash through regulations and that sort of thing. But it shows that at this moment, when Donald Trump is putting his top team together, somebody like Elon Musk is clearly there and in the room while he's doing it.
Oh, Lordy. It's not Beyonce. If it was Beyonce, it'd be fine. Yeah, the BBC they're actually becoming quite entertaining for our show.
Vladimir Putin seems to agree with Mr. Trump that he might be able to end the war in Ukraine. How?
The challenge becomes when you have an honest conversation with your partners is, what are the goals? Zelensky, for example, he says his goal is to get Crimea back. Well, that's not the goal of the United States, and that's not the goal of the European nation states. We learned that in 2014, that when Putin invaded Crimea, Europe did nothing. And so now when Zelensky says, you know, we will only stop this fighting, there will only be peace once Crimea is returned, we've got news for President Zelensky. Crimea is gone. And if that is your priority of getting Crimea back and having American, you know, soldiers fight to get Crimea back, you're on your own. That is not the priority of America. But the priority of America is peace and to stop the killing.
So if Ukraine says, and it sounds unlikely at the moment, but if Ukraine were to say, right, we give up Crimea, they'd carry on getting the arms for the rest of the battle, would they?
Listen, the reality on the ground is the European nation states and President Biden did not give Ukraine the ability and the arms to win this war at the very beginning and failed to lift the restrictions for Ukraine to win. And so, you know, those are the challenges. What we're going to say to Ukraine is, you know, what do you see as a realistic vision for peace? It's not a vision for winning, but it's a vision for peace. And let's start having the honest conversation. And if President Zelensky comes to the table and says, well, we can only have peace if we have Crimea, he shows to us that he's not serious.
Yeah, not going to happen. The only thing that I'm curious about is, I'm sure Trump will say, listen, Vladimir, Ukraine will never be in NATO. You know that Putin's going to be like, yeah, I need it in writing this time.
Oh, absolutely. After the last time we screwed with him.
Which the other way of doing that is just dissolving NATO by stop paying for it. And honestly, it would be a fine time for it to go.
Well, it's trying to expand into Korea.
Oh, yeah, they're giving that a shot. But behind the scenes, I picked this up from the Wall Street Journal. Had this very long piece. I just pulled the 47-second intro of what the U.S. military is doing in the South Pacific at the moment.
On a remote island in the Pacific Ocean, a sprawling U.S. airfield was left largely abandoned. For decades, the four runways at the northern edge of Tinian sat empty, swallowed up by the jungle. But now, urgent work is taking place to reclaim them. Military crews are clearing the dense overgrowth to unearth the runways in preparation for a crisis in Asia.
Yeah. The U.S. hasn't needed this base in decades, but the threat of a conflict with China is rising, and Beijing has developed weapons capable of striking a vast array of targets.
So the Air Force is adapting. The work on this island is one of a chain of projects that will form part of a key shift in America's military blueprint.
Yeah, there it is. The Department of Defense is already on it. They're already done. They know that this whole thing is ending. They probably don't even care about NATO at this point because it's all shifting to China. And
so there's a couple of things. On Zakaria's show this morning on CNN.
The anti-constitutionalist douche.
Yeah, he's no good.
No, he's no good.
He had David Frum.
Yes.
Who used to be, I think, a writer for Reagan or something. He's supposedly a Republican. But
Wasn't he a neocon? Wasn't he in the neocon group?
He's definitely a neocon. He really should be a Democrat. Most of the neocons, I think, because of Liz Cheney and Dick Cheney, I think most of the neocons are slightly switching over to becoming the Democrats that they always were.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, they were originally liberals. I mean, if you look at the history of the neoconservative movement, it was part of the neoliberal movement, which was a Democrat mostly.
Yes.
Although the Republicans suffered from that problem too. And he said that Trump, you said it, and nobody said anything about it. He says, Trump's already signaled to China that they can have Taiwan.
Why would he say that?
It doesn't make sense to me either. I was just like, what?
No,
that's bull crap. No. And the other thing was, we have one of our producers, Navy guy, and he said that the admirals are all signaling to everybody that war with China begins.
2027. It was scheduled in 2027.
In 780 days, specific number.
Really, that's 2027. Yeah. I know because I'm receiving information, and someone's sending it to me in written form for fear of this is someone who would know this stuff. And he said, oh, well, since the generals are out there, it was Milley. Was it Milley that we had? Who do we have talking about it? 2027. This is known. I mean, inside the the Navy and possibly Marines. I don't know if the Air Force, but I think...
Well, this all stems from something she said.
Yes.
In China, the guy runs the place.
Yeah, that guy.
He said something about 2020 or getting ready or something. Yeah. I'm wondering whether this is just a part of the scheme to build things up and spend money.
Oh, well, hello. I said it. Hello. Yes.
That's what you've been saying all along. Yeah. But they're getting so specific.
Yeah, but it's so perfect because you just take Taiwan. They're the new Ukraine. You do a little skirmish on the border or something. And everyone's probably in on it.
I have to assume everyone's in on it.
Now, the question is Trump in on it, or are they doing this kind of thing to make sure he's even more pissed off?
Next year this evening, multiple sources telling ABC News hackers working for China.
Multiple sources. Department of Defense, Pentagon, what sources?
Broke into the phone NSA. Used by Donald Trump's lead criminal defense attorney, Todd Blanche, and were able to get text messages and able to record calls made on that phone. Here's Aaron Kuchersky tonight.
Thank you, David.
Tonight, new details on the length Chinese spies will go to infiltrate American politics and President-elect Trump. Multiple sources tell ABC News hackers working for China's intelligence service broke into the phone used by Trump's lead criminal defense attorney, Todd Blanche.
Now, we don't have to play the whole thing, but you get the idea. It's like, are they taunting Trump to make sure he's still mad at China? Or why else does this pop up? And how do we know they're Chinese hackers? Sources say, this is no good. If they're
hackers that we've known this since Snowden days,
yes,
that the misdirection of all this stuff, it could be that our people doing it, making it look, spoofing China. We can't even these fake phone calls I get every day about how my PG&E bill is going to be lowered by some guy named Tim, who's got an accent you can barely understand him. And the spoofed numbers are, it's like, what does it take? We have you and I both complain about Elizabeth Warren and their Rachel and these fake phone calls we all get. Everybody gets them. Is what does it take to stop the ability to spoof phone numbers?
Well,
I'd like to know from some hacker out there, somebody out there has a clue.
I'm glad you brought that up, because
why is it so easy? I'm guessing. To spoof phone numbers. I got a call the other day and it said something Liquid Hardware or something. And I said, what is this? And the guy says he's from PG&E. He wants to lower my rates on the my gas bill. And I said, well, how come you're coming in from the hardware company? And a click.
Yeah, it's actually, there's something else going on. And someone sent me a video about it's kind of complicated material, but the basics are quite interesting. I think it's the same hack, quote unquote hack, that caused this story, which I truly believe is a psychological operation from the Democrat Party to make everybody worried about Trump the racist.
Moving on, federal authorities are looking into disturbing and racist text messages sent from unknown
I think you're right on. This is the Democrat. Mimi said this, we were talking about it today. She says, this has got to be Democrats doing this, because who else would be doing this? This only makes nothing but sense. And I think you nailed it.
Rather, to Black Americans in at least 10 different states in this country. Now, many of the messages which were sent to middle school, high school, and college students make reference to slavery. Adriana Diaz has more on this very troubling story.
Very troubling.
You have been selected to be a house slave at the Fieldview Farm plantation. Be ready on Saturday, November 9th.
By the way, only a Democrat could dream up something as evil as this.
Yeah, and then my other favorite one is the picking cotton one.
Oh,
that's
no, it's coming.
11 a.m. sharp.
This was a text message Latasha Nelson's eighth grade daughter, Jemiah, and her friend received while at home
in
Connecticut.
Think of the children.
My daughter came down and showed me, I was like, wait a minute. I was angry. One, disgusted. Two.
In at least 10 states across the nation, CBS News has learned that Black Americans have received anonymous racist text messages similar to these. And while varying slightly, many of the messages read, you have been selected to pick cotton or become a house slave at a plantation.
I felt scared, sad, kind of shaken by it.
Devereaux Adams lives in Atlanta and is a student at Western.
All right, so the stories just go on and on and on about this, but not a single moment does anyone say, how does this happen? This is a, these are text messages, just like the phone calls you get. How, this is not trackable all of a sudden? Well, here is the issue. It's the SS7, the signaling system number 7. And signaling system number 7 is this, it's kind of a walled garden around all of the telecom networks. And in order to have interoperability from one network to the other, so from China or Indonesia or America or Canada or Europe, they all have to go through SS7. And the thing with SS7 is you can become a member of SS7 for, I think it's like $25,000 to kind of get started, or you can buy access to the SS7 network from any number of crappy countries, which everyone's a member of it. And that's how it's done. That's, once you're in that system, then you can spoof numbers, you can send text messages that are not traceable back to a number other than, okay, it's in, you know, in this country somewhere, which may be Kazakhstan for all I know. And we don't really know who sent the message. The system is fundamentally broken. This SS7 thing is no good. It's a mess. And
it's no good. It has to be redesigned or just killed.
Yeah, something has to change with that. And it's like amongst the telco guys is this big joke. Oh, SS7. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we know. And you can buy yourself it. We could buy our way in and send messages to people about picking cotton.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, and just think of all those political messages that, you know, that you can call it, but it's not a real number. You can try and calling back. By the way, they did stop except for Carrie Lake. Carrie Lake still needs money and support.
Oh, she's always using poor girl.
She's like, help me.
Nobody likes her.
Help me.
I guess.
I'm in the fight of my life.
People just don't like, if we're talking about racism, I have some clips I want to play.
Okay.
This is Brooks and Capehart.
Oh, man. You're going back to the
you
well.
Said yes.
Back to the well. Brooks and Capehart, yes.
So I have five clips, and the thing is, this is I guess I'm always beside myself in the fact that PBS cannot put people on that can argue both sides of a debate. They just have two agreeable guys that think each other are both fabulous and they're both correct, except maybe they're not as correct as I am, and kind of thing. So it starts off with a preliminary clip. This is Brooks and C. Kelly Dittmar. And I want to introduce, this is a woman who's a professor at Rutgers, and she's part of some women's coalition. She's a harsh-looking kind of, I don't know, it's probably man-hater, if that's the best way to put it. And she is just on the war path against Trump and the whole thing. And this is after Trump got elected. And I thought it was a good prelude to what happens with Brooks and Capehart, because they keep referring back to her. And this is her in mid-sentence talking about, you know, what a creep Trump is and how everything's bad.
And look at in this election and in how Donald Trump waged his campaign, which was, in fact, taking that progress that you've pointed to and reminding a subset of voters that this is somehow threatening, right? And that's true along lines of race as well. Since the day Donald Trump began campaigning, he tapped into white male grievance politics, saying, for example, you know, society is becoming too soft and feminine. That's something his supporters are more likely to believe, based on Public Religion Research Institute data. Oh. Or men are being punished just for being men. Gender is a binary and we shouldn't move beyond that. So we saw that in the anti-trans rhetoric throughout the campaign for Donald Trump and other Republicans down the ballot. And so while we see these gains, we have to remember that progress is not inevitable. It takes the effort and momentum from everybody, including groups like white women, to push back against those who are saying that this progress is somehow bad and threatening to their own communities.
Okay, so the progress is to deny gender is a binary. That was in there.
Yeah.
And this idea that, well, you know, this transgender thing, they're making too much out of it, these Republicans. They're making too much out of it. But meanwhile, it's an underlying theme of everything they do and say and talk about.
Well, trans is the new black.
Trans is the new black. So now we go to this is the Brooks and Capehart opener.
For more on Donald Trump's reelection, we turn now to the analysis of Brooks and Capehart. That's New York Times columnist David Brooks and Jonathan Capehart, associate editor for The Washington Post. Well,
makes it sound like it. Wow, we've all been waiting for this. Woo, yeah. Oh, stand well, by,
everybody. Actually, I have.
I know. Yeah. Stand by. You've all been waiting for it, kids.
Come back. Jeff, so we've had a few days to assess the implications of Donald Trump's sweeping victory, winning the Electoral College and the popular vote, the first time a Republican has done that in some two decades. David, what does his really decisive victory reveal to you about this country?
You know, I think since 2016, we've entered a new political era. And the period between 1980 and 2016 was the information.
I got to stop this and make a comment. This idea that this is the first time they won a popular vote in two decades, that's five election cycles. That's hardly anything.
That's the length of this show. Hello.
And they've all, and they have not. And so what?
Yeah.
The whole thing, I have to do a lecture on this on the show one of these days about how this came about. It's never been I don't want to say the Electoral College should be dissolved because I don't think so. But it turns out if you look at the history of the country, the Electoral College has only once ever not gone with the popular vote once, except for recently. And it did it once in 1824 or 1828 with John Quincy Adams beating Andrew Jackson, who then went on after that to become president twice. And it was the popular vote difference, I believe, was 38,000 in favor of Jackson, but Quincy Adams got the that was it. It hadn't happened until you got to George Bush. So it's not like the Republicans cannot win the popular vote. They always won the popular vote until, I'm giving the lecture now, it looks
yeah,
like.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Until now. And what happened? Well, that was...
Well, hold on a second. Isn't this the same as saying hottest year on record? And they just go back to 1950 and
it's identical to that kind of bull crap.
Yeah.
And here's what really happened. It was Karl Rove in the year 2000 when he was the campaign manager, because he was the campaign manager for George Bush in Texas, and they became the campaign manager for his election campaign. And Karl Rove invented the idea of swing states. And he looked at it, at the whole thing. He said, wait a minute. Why are we spending money in California, Washington, and Oregon to get George elected? When we're looking for electoral votes. They're giving their electoral votes to the Democrats. That's just the way it is. That's the way I see it. And he was like a genius about spotting every state. He said, now, these states, if we can just get them to give then we George have,
then
to
we have,
win.
Then we have enough electoral college votes.
And so he's the one who invented the idea of swing states. This was carried, and so he won. And the next year, George Bush won the popular vote, too. He did very well for himself. But that idea was carried forward by Kellyanne Conway when Trump was elected the first time in 2016, and they pulled the same stunt. They eked it out by saying, wait, why are we waiting? And it's a cheap trick. That's why the Republicans can spend less money on these elections than the Democrats, because they don't go for everybody's vote. They say, no, we're going to. In fact, they did, because I'm in California. I noticed this. They abandoned the state completely.
Yeah.
And so they ended up with the situation. So it's an anomaly that Trump reversed in this last election, because he went to California. He decided to get some popular votes in. And he won with the popular vote of 5 million. So this is bull crap. Anyone who talks about, oh, you know, they can't win for the 20 years, blah, blah, blah. It's all Karl Rove's idea. It was a workaround that was effective, but it needs to be rebuked.
And we decided that America was moving to a post-industrial economy led by college grads. So many of our policies were oriented to favor college grads. Education policy, let's get everybody to four-year colleges. Immigration policy, let's provide college grads with cheap labor, even though less skilled people are going to face some labor competition. Trade policy, we allowed manufacturing jobs to go overseas while service jobs were not threatened in that way. Geographic policy, we had a laissez-faire attitude where talent congregated in Austin and Dallas and Washington and Boston, and we didn't really worry about all those places left behind. And so to me, we had a policy that favored college grads and disfavored everybody else. And basically in 2016 and emphatically last Tuesday, a lot of people said, I've had enough, we need a change.
Jonathan, do you see that same kind of realignment that the new fault line in our politics is education level?
It's one of them. I mean, I don't disagree with anything that David just said in terms of his analysis, but we cannot ignore what was being discussed in the last segment there with Aaron Haynes and Professor Dittmar. The role of racism and sexism, misogyny, grievance, white nationalism, that was very much a part of Donald Trump's campaign.
Oh, my Lord. There's no evidence of any of this. These people are just talking out of their buttholes.
It's astonishing to me. And then, because Brooks and Capehart are basically on the same team.
Yeah.
Probably in more ways than one.
Yeah.
Brooks ends up agreeing with him, and here we go with the next clip.
And I think we need to acknowledge it, we need to talk about it, and then I think as a country, we need to confront it. We've never done it in our history. We probably won't do it now, but I think we need to acknowledge the fact that the incoming president of the United States
is a racist.
Openly ran on racist messages about fellow citizens, non-citizens, people who have always come to this country seeking a better life long before Build the Wall. So we could talk about education realignment, we can talk about political realignment, but until we talk about the grievances that Donald Trump exploited, as Professor Dittmar said, we're going to be in this mess for a while.
What about that, David, that wasn't disqualified?
Hold on a second. The professor talked about trans. How come these guys are talking about race?
Well, she did mention, you know, misogyny.
Yeah, but that's
and
not...
race that, and misogyny, same thing. Well, it's all part of the same bucket.
Hmm.
I agree. I want to mention something here, which is for anyone listening to this, I have a line that is very good. I got it from somebody's post, and I thought it was a great idea to use as a one-liner, which is when somebody says, why did Kamala lose? Well, we knew all along that this was a racist country, and she's black, and she's it's also a misogynist country. She's black, she's a woman, she's a South Asian. We knew this all along. That's why she lost, because of the racism and the misogyny. And you the counter, you say, at this point, you say to them, well, then why did they nominate her if you knew all that?
Yeah, exactly.
Why did you nominate her if you knew all that? You listen to these two jokers going on and on and on. Well, that's fine. Okay, if you accept that, why'd you nominate her? Why don't you run somebody else that you could win?
Because, well, the answer is, in what we heard previously, because they're so tied up in DEI and wokeness and political correctness, they couldn't say, well, she sucks. They couldn't say that because she's a black Asian woman and a woman. They couldn't say it. And
of course not. Of course not. They
so
can't say anything.
Do these jamokes ever get to some conclusion here that what the real issues are? Or is it just more Trump is
the racist?
I'm looking either for some self-analysis, which you don't expect, or I'm looking for because I haven't found it yet. What is the track they're going to go after Trump with? What is the thing they're going to try and go after him with?
I haven't found that either. I'm looking for it.
Because everyone wants him in.
They can't use the old ones.
No, they want him in. He is the chosen one to do the China gambit, to deal with whatever happens with the economy in 2026, cyclical issue, while they should be licking their wounds and figuring out why the country doesn't care about them. And the mainstream, they're the ones that have the biggest problem. There's no Trump bump, baby. No one's listening to you anymore.
Yes, this is a problem. So this little short clip here is the dollar sign clip that says, wow, it's the dollar sign was supposed to be a four.
Mm-hmm. I got you.
Yeah, well, a million things have shocked me that have not been disqualifying about Donald Trump. I personally think Donald Trump is clearly misogynist. I think he's clearly a racist. I think that's been in his family for generations, frankly.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, fire these guys. Put them into that special company.
He's clearly a racist.
Obviously. So
well, give us some examples.
Well, you see all the hip-hop guys, they voted for him because they're racist, too. There's no examples. These guys are ruining the show. They have no new material.
So let's go with the last clip of the group then, and I'll reconsider ever putting them back on the show.
Well, if they come up with something new, I mean, they're talking themselves out of a gig here. Does anyone watch this? Someone must.
But to make that argument, somehow you also have to explain why the gender gap went down. Why Kamala Harris did worse among women than Joe Biden did.
Because they're misogynists.
Somehow you have to explain why.
Because women are misogynists.
Trump got more black voters than any Republican since Richard Nixon.
Because black voters are racist.
Somehow you have to explain how he massively improved Republican standing among Hispanic voters.
This is actually good.
And so he created this broad network. And the way I would explain those phenomena is race and sexism are clearly major facts in American life. But I think in our politics, class is rising in salience and race and gender are falling in salience. And when you say people had to choose between their race or their gender for about white women, you're ignoring that they have brains and that they have economic views, they have social views, they have a million other views. And so those views are part of how people make their decisions, not just an ethnic identity.
It's all part of the stew. And all I'm arguing is don't ignore the potatoes and the carrots while also focusing on the meat.
Okay. Oh my I'm all for eating. No, I'm on a protein diet right now. So
if I ever start using stew as an analogy on this podcast.
Yes, I will have someone shoot you.
Yes, please. That is very necessary. You know, Tina said something the other day. She said that the problem with Democrats when they talk to women is they only talk below the belt. So that's the only that when they're talking, they're looking at your vagina, nothing else. I think there's something to that. There was no real talk of women. It was all about abortion and
it's all about abortion.
And do you have the right equipment that you need or whatever? Okay, back to the world stage for a moment, as there was a meeting in Hungary. Viktor Orban, you know, the far right Donald Trump
far right maniac.
Yeah, maniac. He's now Hungary now holds the presidency for the European Union. I believe that was part of the deal where he said, okay, I'll let you send 50 billion euros, which America.
I thought it was rotating.
Yes, rotating.
I thought that deal was something else. I thought the fact that they're head of the European Union at the moment is a rotating position, that they were up.
It is rotating, yes. But everyone comes over there because they didn't kill him because he said, okay, you can send money to Ukraine. I think that's a fair assessment. It's like, we won't kill you if you let us send the money to Ukraine. So, the outgoing dude, I forget his name. Is that from, did Italy have it? Maybe Italy had it. And of course, Queen Ursula had to come in to give a little update. Because she spoke to Vice President-elect President-elect Trump, and we're going to negotiate. Don't you worry. There's a lot of fear in Europe about the tariffs, particularly Italy. I might add, that according to Willow, who lives there, the Italians are all freaked out because we're a huge export country. So it's more about cars than anything. I don't think you have to worry about your Italian cars.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
People who want to buy a Ferrari will pay whatever they want for it. But you're talking about, yeah.
They're already overpriced.
Our olive oil. And I said, don't worry about that. I don't think that's going to be the problem. Anyway, Queen Ursula, you might have seen a 20-second version of this clip. I went back and got the full version just so we could hear all in context.
The second question was, Victor, it was something with the two of us and I forgot the content.
How to negotiate with Trump on trade.
Ah.
Sorry.
How to negotiate with Trump on trade.
Yes. So I think, first of all, engage. Very important. What we have started yesterday. Secondly, discuss about common interests. And there are common interests that we have. So and then go into negotiations. Common interests are, for example, this is one topic that we touched upon. I would not say discussed, but we touched upon yesterday. It's the whole topic of LNG. We still get a lot of LNG via Russia, from Russia. And why not replace it by American LNG, which is cheaper for us and brings down our energy prices, but is something where we can get into a discussion, also what our trade deficit is concerned. So engage, look at common interest, and then negotiate.
Thank you for saying what. First of all, what? You are still getting gas from Russia? What happened to
and
these
how
sanctions?
Is it more expensive than hauling it over on a ship?
Well, that's a lie, but this is something that happened earlier in the week, which went completely underreported.
Russia has closed one of the biggest gas pipelines to Europe, Nord Stream 1. It begins in northwest Russia, passes through the Baltic Sea, and empties into Germany. It is the longest subsea pipeline in the world. This pipeline keeps Europe running, especially Germany. So this shutdown has spooked the German government. They fear the lights could go off. So Europe is going all out in preparation. Their first order of business is violating their own sanctions. This is very interesting. Let me explain. Russia needs a specific turbine to repair the Nord Stream pipeline. But that turbine is not in Russia. It was sent to Canada for repairs. Now, if Canada returns it, it would violate Western sanctions. If not, Russia could drag out this shutdown. The Western plan is to achieve energy security. And their chosen method? Violating their own sanctions on Russia.
Now, I don't know about you.
Great. Clip of the day.
Oh, well, gee, thank you.
I know. I didn't know. There it is. Clip of the day. I never heard this either. Why are we being, why is this information on, you know, we have CBS and NBC and ABC doing all this news reporting. What are they talking about that they don't talk about this?
They're talking about trans and race. That's all they do. They're just gaslighting everybody. Oh, trans rights. Oh, race. Oh, misogyny. Meanwhile, that cannot be a coincidence that, and this happened just before the election, Russia, like, or maybe it was right after the election, Russia, click, I'm sorry, we're just cutting off your gas because we don't have that turbine. And we know about this turbine story because it popped up months and months ago that the turbine has to be repaired and that has to happen in Canada. And Canada's like, no, we can't do that. But all of this has thrown the German parliament into disarray.
Yeah, they fell apart.
Throws the German government into a period of uncertainty. But Germany's chancellor says he had no other choice but to fire his finance minister, bringing down his own coalition.
Too often, the necessary compromises have been drowned out by publicly staged disputes and loud ideological demands. Too often, he is engaged in petty party political tactics. Too often, he has broken my trust.
Up until now, Olaf Scholz, Social Democrats, the Greens and the pro-business Free Democrats had been part of a fragile coalition, but that was brought to breaking point after weeks of differences over how to boost the German economy. Scholz and the Greens wanted massive state investment, but Christian Lindner, now the former finance minister, rejected both tax increases and any changes to Germany's strict rules on debt.
This afternoon, the Chancellor gave me an ultimatum to suspend the constitutional debt break. I couldn't do that because I would have been breaking my oath of office.
Germany's economy is set to shrink in 2024 for the second year running. Scholz says he'll seek a vote of confidence in the German parliament in mid-January, which could pave the way for early elections.
So, you know, the finance minister is like, no, we have a rule here. We're not going to borrow more money than X amount. And no matter what the problem is, we're not going to do it. Scholz says, get out. And now they're on track for elections. But hold the phone. Headline, early elections in Germany may not be possible. Have you heard this? Why it may not be possible?
No, I haven't heard any of this stuff.
It's so bad. It's so bad in Germany. This is where you say, how bad is it?
How bad is it?
They may not be able to hold elections in Germany because of a lack of paper for the ballots. there's not enough paper in the country, which could be. Yes.
What is wrong with these people? This all began, and we've tracked it. Yes. When they started shutting down the nuclear reactors to appease the Greens.
No.
Climate change.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Due to climate change.
Exactly. Now, it's possible that this is some gambit so they can get electronic voting machines in there. I don't know. That's just something that occurred to
me. Vote by internet.
That'll be great. So we're not sure how they're going to solve this, but I think we should send them paper, you know, or maybe we have kids. Everyone save one page of paper at school and we'll send it to those poor people in Germany because they don't have any paper. I mean,
wow.
I thought Germany was a big paper country. I know they make pencils. I know they're big on the pencil side. Brunzel, and they got these big industrial giants of, it's baffling to me. And if that's the state of the German economy, whew, Europe, I mean, all of Europe is going to be in dire, dire straits.
If they're not already.
Yeah. Anyway, I do have one clip from Question Time, Prime Minister's Question Time. We haven't had that in a while on the show.
Nope.
Yep. Keir Starmer is the new prime minister. And well, there were some interesting questions during Question Time. And it was just your typical funny little Brit humor bit.
As leader of His Majesty's opposition, I will be taking a different approach to the last opposition by being a constructive opposition. And so I would like to start by congratulating President-elect Trump on his impressive victory this morning. The Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary met him in September. Did the Foreign Secretary take that opportunity to apologise for making derogatory and scatological references, including, and I quote, Trump is not only a woman-hating, neo-Nazi sympathising sociopath, he is also a profound threat to the international order. And if he did not apologise, will the Prime Minister do so now on his behalf?
Well, the Foreign Secretary and I did meet President-elect Trump just a few weeks ago for dinner for about a couple of hours, and we discussed a number of issues of global significance. It was a very constructive exercise.
It was the best.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, Katie Hopkins talked about this in that last clip that we played last show.
Yeah.
Where, you know, these guys... big mouths, big talkers, and that foreign secretary said what she said there.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to go over.
Mm-mm. Oh man, the world is funny. It's funny, but we're here. We're here to keep everybody on track.
Well, since we're doing that, since you're the expert on this one, what's going on in Amsterdam?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I have two clips.
Okay, hold on a second. Here we go.
There's increased security in Amsterdam in the aftermath of violence that broke out after a soccer match between Israeli and Dutch teams Thursday night. Earth. Attacks on Israeli fans who had confronted pro-Palestinian protests earlier were immediately denounced as anti-Semitic. Reporter Terry Schultz joins us from Amsterdam. Terry, thanks for being with us.
Earth. Hi, Scott.
Amsterdam's mayor called Thursday a dark night. What is it like there
dark
now?
Dark night.
Well, it's calm on the outside, but there's still plenty of tension under the surface. Right now, I'm outside the Amsterdam Modern Orthodox Synagogue, and the city said it was putting extra security in place around locations like this, which they feared could be targets. They're determined to prevent more incidents like we're seeing overnight Thursday, where supporters of the Israeli soccer team were, in the words of Dutch authorities themselves, hunted down and brutally beaten for being Jewish. All demonstrations have been banned in Amsterdam through the weekend, and there are reports police are conducting home searches of people suspected in taking part in the attacks. The Israeli fans were given security and special transport to the airport Friday, and extra flights were added to get them back to Tel Aviv quickly.
Members of the Dutch government and even the king, I gather, have spoken out. What have they said?
And that's right. There's been a lot of outrage from abroad and domestically. Here's Dutch Prime Minister Dick Schoof.
It's a terrible anti-Semitic attack, and we will not tolerate, and we will persecute the perpetrators, and I'm deeply ashamed that it could happen in the Netherlands in 2024.
I'm very happy that there's another Dutch guy on the scene who we can talk to, perpetrate. This guy is worse than Rutte. This guy barely can get sentences out.
Yeah.
I have thoughts, but maybe you want to play this. Should I play your second clip first?
Yeah, might as well, and you can tell us what
okay.
You know.
All right.
And of course, there's ugly history here, isn't there?
That's right. Israeli Prime Minister, Israeli President Yitzhak Herzog said Dutch King Willem Alexander called him Friday and said, quote, "We failed the Jewish community of the Netherlands during World War II, and last night we failed again." That's referring to the fact, as you mentioned, that the Netherlands is one of the countries which had the highest percentage of its Jewish population, over 70%, killed during the Holocaust. And beyond that, Scott, tonight will be the 86th anniversary of Kristallnacht, when Nazis and their supporters rampaged through Jewish synagogues and businesses and arrested tens of thousands of Jews. Amsterdam Mayor Femke Halsema even referred to this tragic history in a press conference about the soccer incident.
This jamoke.
Overlevenden van de Holocaust, hun kinderen en kleinkinderen.
The survivors of the Holocaust, their children and grandchildren, she said, have admirably rebuilt their own communities after the war and made their city, which had failed them terribly during the war, flourish again. Halsema says she's ashamed of her city and furious.
Terry, Dutch officials have confirmed reports that some Israeli soccer fans ripped up a Palestinian flag and shouted praise, sometimes using graphic language, for the destruction of Gaza. Is that being discussed?
Well, it is a bit. On the authority side, they've really focused on condemning the anti-Semitic attacks for now. But on social media, and when talking to people in the streets, as I have, they also criticize the actions of the Israeli fans and soccer hooligans. What's seen as this imbalanced response is being called out by pro-Palestinian activists like Nadia Slimi, a 28-year-old woman who was present Thursday night at a planned protest that was kept away from the soccer stadium.
The way that they treat us, the Palestinian protesters, with so much violence, and we do not get escorts to our houses. We get escorts to jail, or we get escorts to far outside of the city.
All right. I'll give you some facts, and I'll give you my opinion.
Well, first, before you do that, I want to ask you the question. Was Kristallnacht? I thought it was a German phenomenon in Germany. Did it take place in Holland and Amsterdam?
No. No,
of course not.
But that's part of the analysis. Why, instead of saying this is about Gaza and Israel, it's all Kristallnacht and it's the Jews being persecuted. It's probably a form of Jew abuse. But first, the facts. And I think remember, the government in the Netherlands now is Geert Wilders. This is the guy, very pro-Israel and very anti-Islam. He's the leader of the party. He did not become prime minister. Instead, he chose the guy you heard talking, and he is the former director of all the intelligence services in the Netherlands. A very odd
spook.
Choice. Spook. Yes, a spook. So the facts are, the people in the Netherlands are sick of it. They are sick of the Islamification, as they call it, of the Netherlands. Moroccan gangs run the country. In essence, they've been killing journalists and all left and right. Doesn't matter. The gangs, the macro mafia, and you can get someone killed now for 500 euros. Used to be 50,000, 5,000. Now it's 500. No problem. They're running all the drugs all throughout Europe. They're running through the port of Rotterdam and what they call asylum seekers are being shoved into all these little towns, into these asylum centers, and it's just rampant. And when I returned to the Netherlands at the end of 1999, and I moved back to Amsterdam, I had no idea. I'm like, what happened to this country? And it was only in a matter of, how long was I gone? Since 87? So, you know, it was 12, 13 years. And it's like, what happened? And there was a guy, a very educated professor, very educated, very well-spoken, extremely high Dutch language use, incredibly flamboyant gay guy called Pim Fortuyn. And Pim Fortuyn said, I'm sick of this stuff. I'm running for office to become the prime minister of the Netherlands. And his number one talking point was, we have to stop the Islamification of the Netherlands. It makes no sense. We don't need these people here. These are not the right people you're sending from Morocco. It sounds similar, by the way, to Trump. You're sending us your criminals, your nutcases, and we're going to stop all this. That is the platform I'm running on. What happens to Pim Fortuyn? Assassinated 2 weeks before the election. His party won posthumously, which of course fell apart because they had no leader. And the whole country went into trauma. Trauma shut down because everyone was afraid. I mean, you got a politician being assassinated in the Netherlands that was not heard of. Now, there were some radicals. There were some people who were standing up and saying, no, we've got to carry this message on. Most notably, Theo van Gogh, who was a descendant of Vincent van Gogh, and Ayaan Hirsi Ali. She was a politician. She was from Somalia, and she entered the Dutch government, and she was also very anti-Islam, mainly because of female mutilation, which she had been subjected to, and they made a film. And they made this film together, and then Theo van Gogh, who I knew, I've been on his show before. He was kind of like a podcast dude, but, you know, very, just a scruffy kind of guy. Did, you know, very, very left wing, actually, until he couldn't be that anymore. And an Islamist nut job shot him with an AK-47 in the streets of Amsterdam, stuck a knife in his chest with a list of names who were going to be next. So this country went into complete shutdown, and the policy of the Netherlands was, okay, these people are coming here. We need to let them in. Why? No one has ever explained. Of course, this happened throughout all of Europe. Look at Scandinavia. Look at France. Look at the UK. Look everywhere. It's happening everywhere. Germany. The policy was, we'll just let them assimilate in their own time. So they got their own schools, they got their own neighborhoods, they got their, you know, mosques everywhere. Oh, you know, we have to let them have their religion. The mosque with the speakers outside, and people are sick and tired of it. Now, that's the facts. And it's people, I mean, there are no-go zones in all over the country. It is insane. My analysis is that this happened. Now, the police in the Netherlands are not necessarily really brave in many cases. I hesitate saying that because, boy, they were really brave against COVID protesters. They water cannoned them and beat them to a pulp and sick dogs on them. But when it came to this, like, nah, we're not really going to do too much. And the way this is being spun, I believe that the spook, the prime minister, that this is being used to stop this immigration and start changing the country and kicking these people out or taking harsh measures and getting the country behind them. So instead of, oh, this is about some war in the Middle East. No, this is like Kristallnacht. You want to talk about trauma in the Netherlands. Yeah, there's trauma about Pim Fortuyn and Theo van Gogh, but the trauma of what happened to the Jews in the Netherlands is much bigger. And I think they're trying to spin this so that they can change the policy and start taking action. And they will.
Well, this doesn't even sound like Islamification. It sounds like a Moroccan gangs who could be of any religion.
They're all
taking over the place.
Believe me, it's Islamification. The mosques, it's Islamification. It is. And the Moroccans, Hamas and other groups, they're all operating there. It's really, really bad. I mean, I can't get my daughter to leave yet. I keep begging her, like, you got to leave that place. And I don't know if any other country in Europe is any better. Just look at what happened. It's crazy. I mean, remember what happened in Sweden, land of ABBA. You know, the burning cars, there's no go zones. Now, this is the first move of what I think will be a very turbulent period in all of Europe and in the Netherlands for sure. And that's, you play the Jew card. That's how you do it.
Well, this is not a new phenomenon with the battles between the white Christendom and the Moors, for example, which was a Muslim movement that took over most of Spain and influenced it greatly, and then they had to be driven out. Right. So they come and go.
yeah, but this is in the last, you know, 25 years. This is just the Netherlands. It was not an immigrant country.
Well, who made it the immigrant country? That's the people to blame.
The socialists. Socialist parties who have run that country into the ground. Socialists and socialist left-wing media operatives. And the Dutch are nice people. So, you know, they don't want to say, you know, this, the Islam, you think that woke culture, you might as well just put a Dutch flag on it. They're so nice and so kind, but that's changing now. And I think it's going to get much worse. This is just used as a tipping point. I don't trust this spook for a second. The whole media narrative and the fact that, yeah, the protest, the Israeli soccer fans, they definitely had a whole protest going on. This is a setup.
Yeah, well, there was some of the early reports that was pretty, it seemed as though the Jewish or Israeli soccer hooligans, and yeah. I've been around these guys from different countries. I mean, the British guys are even worse, I think. are troublemakers.
Soccer's always trouble. It's always
what
trouble.
They do. Mm-hmm. And so they fomented this, and then, of course, then all of a sudden it's become a different issue, anti-Semitism.
Also, I follow World Cup soccer, but I didn't know that. So they were playing Ajax, which is the Amsterdam team. I didn't know that there was a huge contingent of the Israeli soccer team who follow them to a game in Amsterdam. That by itself, I've never really heard of that. So why were they there?
Of
the fans coming from Israel?
I think a lot of them did, yeah, because shipped them back to Israel.
But that's my point. I can't remember when, oh yeah, the Israeli team is playing Ajax and they brought all their supporters. What gate was this?
I was on a train in Europe with a bunch of these British guys that were traveling to Germany from the United Kingdom to go to a game.
Yes, but not from Israel. I've never heard of this.
It's probably been going on for a while. I don't know. It depends on how often Israel would play that team. It's like, currently in American football, we've got teams that are playing each other that never played each other before because they changed all these conferences.
My insinuation here is that they were brought over for this to happen. I don't recall Israeli supporters coming in.
I think you can make that assertion.
Yeah,
sure.
Just for a game, just for one game. Is there a cup going on that I'm unaware of? Or is it just a friendly? No.
The Egg Cup.
Before we take a break, some sad news. I do want to recognize a voice that was very important for tens of millions of people around America.
Elwood Edwards, the man who recorded AOL's iconic greetings, has died.
Welcome. You've got mail. File's done. Goodbye.
Edwards recorded those four iconic lines in 1989 for the company that would become America Online. He was paid $200. His wife, who worked for the company, recommended him for the gig.
Hundreds of millions of people would eventually hear the greetings as they became a key part of the AOL experience with the internet provider, propelling Edwards' voice to worldwide fame. WKYC, the Cleveland TV station where Edwards worked for many years, said he died on Tuesday at the age of 74 following a long illness.
Aww. Yeah, it was a good guy.
You met him?
No, but I feel like I knew him. He was a good guy. We loved him. Yeah. Hello. Goodbye. You've got mail. I mean, I grew up with him. He was around when in my 20s. All right. Well,
all right.
You don't care about dead people.
No, I'm glad you got it. Here's the TikTok clip, very short one. I actually cut it down.
Oh,
but this is what's going on with these lunatics. This is the Glock girl.
Glock girl. Okay.
I would go as far to say that I would purchase a Glock, and if you and I are walking on the same street and it's dark out and you're a white male, you have to be white for this to count, okay? If you're a white male, even if you don't approach me, I will shoot you. Yeah, I know. So has to be on the street, you and I. Has to be at nighttime. During the day, not so much, but at nighttime.
Boy, I'm glad you got that, John.
So there's a bunch of women that are threatening to poison all men.
Oh yeah.
And you want to get the blue tattoo
and the blue bracelet. Yeah, I got clips for that. I got clips for that. I got clips for that.
The onus is on you.
No, I'm going to wait. I'm this is a tease because first I'm going to thank you for your courage. Say in the morning to you, the man who put the C in the election anal. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. John C. DeMora.
Good morning to you, Mr. Adam Curry. Good morning, our ship, Sea Boots, and Graffiti, New York, Subs, and the War Dames, and it's out there.
And hello to all the trolls in the troll room. At the peak, we had 2,530 at the peak.
That stinks.
What do you mean it stinks? It's above average. It's above the average. It's
average is 2,400.
Right, so it's above the average.
But it's like we're doing. This is good stuff that we're doing here.
Okay, all right. You hold yourself in higher regard than the trolls. That's what.
Yes,
going.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, well, there you go. You can join the trolls at trollroom.io. That's where you can listen live 24 hours a day. The No Agenda stream is rolling with many, many good podcasts. All talk, no commercials. All value for value, all having a good time. Many of them doing it live. If not, it's a pre-recorded, but you just log into the troll room. There's always someone there ready to talk with you, ready to have a little chat, or just to troll you, possibly. You can listen to these live there, or of course you can get a modern podcast app, which I highly recommend. Get one at podcastapps.com. You will be alerted when these shows go live, like the No Agenda show, or before us, the Rock Roll Pre-Show, Darren O'Neill. And you will, it's going live. You click, boom, you're listening to it live. If you can't, the minute we release a show on these modern podcast apps through the Podping technology of podcasting 2.0, you'll be alerted within 90 seconds. So there's no waiting around like in these legacy apps. Wherever you get your podcast, sure. But if you want to get it fast, if you want to be in the know, if you want all the new features, you use a modern podcast app. 17 years and counting for the value for value proposition we have put forth to everyone. We decided early on, we don't have listeners, we have producers. Everybody has a responsibility to produce this show. You can do it with your time, with your talent, or with your treasure. We value all three, and we certainly appreciate people who send us clips, things that we hadn't heard of yet, news stories, boots on the ground, very valuable, and treasure, of course. But one of the things that we have been thanking our producers for a long time is the artwork, which has become... You know, people argue with me, well, isn't AI just a tool? Yeah, AI is just a tool. That's right. You can use it as a tool. But I think that what happens is we just get flooded with AI art, and the true masters, usually the Dutch masters, they feel like, oh, well, you know, why should I even try? You know, these prompt jockeys, they're just doing blah, 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 you know. And I think that's a shame. And I think it's too bad. Luckily, we do have Dutch masters who check in from time to time. I wonder about the artwork for episode 1710, which was done by Nico Syme. Do you think this was AI? Because this was a great piece.
Yeah, totally.
Really?
I think parts of it were AI. He could tell us one way or the other, but it had to be. It was too much. Okay, there's one thing we always have to consider is this AI does one thing well. Speed.
Yes.
It creates art fast, and if you get the right system where it creates, you know, you're prompted to do something, and it gives you four examples, which encourages, you know, that's speed. Mm. And then you can make a couple of adjustments, gives you four more examples, and you pick one. Well, I don't know if the No Agenda Curry Dvorak thing, if you put that on by hand or not, which
that
seems probably good, but the rest of it looks totally AI.
Well, I love the crazy out-of-control monkeys, which, of course, refers back to the 40 monkeys that escaped from the biolab in South Carolina, which that story died. Nothing happened there. Did they ever find the crazy monkeys?
They're still on the loose. I think 35 of them are still on the loose.
Oh, groovy.
They're biting whatever they can find.
So thank you very much, Nico, for bringing us the artwork for episode 1710. Looking back at that episode, I kind of like Darren O'Neill's No Agenda Nitro. We did talk about it, but the monkeys beat that hands down. You like the the Trump ultra MAGA tissues. I thought it was just too small.
The tissue. Yeah, I ended up using it for the newsletter.
Yeah, I just thought it was a little on the small side. I also kind of like Nestworks to-do list, but that was maybe too simple. We had virtue signal, vote, protest, leave country. Stupid. Hey, yeah. Have the celebrities That's left cute. Yet? Have they left yet, those celebrities?
Oh, you know, these guys are just dawdlers. Come on, people, leave. Where's Bruce Springsteen? He's supposed to have gone.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Big talker. Oh, bro, big Bruce, big tough guy.
Now, did Bruce actually say that? Did he actually say
yes,
I'm
he
leaving?
He claims he's going to leave the country along with, I think, Rob Reiner and all the, you know, the same old suspects. What's funny is that the one who initiated this years and years ago during the Bush administration, Barbara Streisand.
Oh, she's still in Malibu.
She stopped saying she was going to leave the country. I don't know what happened to her. She lost her edge.
Ah, that's so. That's
she also has a place up in Squim, Washington. Mimi ran into her a couple times.
Yeah, and that Brolin guy's a real douche, apparently. Her husband.
He's a who? Do you know who I am? Guy.
Yeah, exactly. Surely you've heard of me. Let me have my cheese first. Something one of those guys.
And Mimi says that he, because she's seen him at the they shop at Sunny Farms, which is an organic place, and she says his haircut looks like it must cost $1,000.
How can a haircut look like $1,000?
I don't know, but that's what she says. I haven't seen him.
So here it is. This is Snopes Fact Check. Outdated. What is this? It says, Bruce Springsteen announces he will leave the United States if Donald Trump is elected president in 2024. Let me see. Here's Newsweek with the list of celebrities promising to leave. This is helpful. Ready?
Yeah.
Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce, Kim Kardashian, Tom Hanks, Oprah, Bryan Cranston, Hillary Clinton, all said that they pledged to leave if Trump was reelected. Also, Whoopi Goldberg, Alec Baldwin, John Legend, Chrissy Teigen, Rob Reiner, Barbara Streisand, she's on the list.
Oh, okay.
Cher, Nancy Pelosi, apparently. Megan Rapinoe, that wouldn't be a loss. Amy Schumer.
None of these would be a loss. Are you nuts?
And the list just goes on and on. That's all right. I'd hate to lose them. They provide much content and entertainment for the show.
Actually, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
Name one person on that list except for Nancy Pelosi that provides much entertainment for our show.
Well, the list goes on. AOC is on the list, although I doubt that was ever serious. She provides entertainment for the show.
How could a sitting congressperson, including Nancy Pelosi, say they're going to leave the country?
Yeah, well, it's
if just, a guy's elected. What is wrong with them?
I don't know. Anyway, thank you very much, Nico Syme. Anyone can participate. Anybody these days with AI, yeah. But, you know, the competition is getting stiffer, thank God. I love Nico. Yeah, you're right. He probably used AI, but he still made it round. There's some artist sense in there. You know, there's some element of understanding how art can touch the soul and the heart. And the monkeys totally did. They tugged at our heartstrings. ArtGenerator.com is where you can upload that. Anyone can open an account and participate. And thank you very much to all of our artists who always diligently competing for that coveted spot.
Well, you know, you brought me to the bonus clip. You know, we promised to do bonus clips during these segments.
Yes, you have a bonus clip.
I do. I wasn't thinking about it until you kept bringing up the monkey. So this is the Infinite Monkey report. This is what goes on NPR, the nation's treasure, as a legitimate news report.
One more certitude in this world has been overturned. The infinite monkey theorem holds that a monkey, given an infinite amount of time at a keyboard, would ultimately type out every possible text, including the complete works of Shakespeare. But two Australian researchers, Jay Folletta and Stephen Woodcock, calculate that if every one of the roughly 200,000 chimpanzees in the world typed one key per second, it would take longer than the lifespan of the universe for a primate bard to repeat the words of Shakespeare. In fact, the BBC reports there would be just a 5% chance a chimp would even type the word bananas in their own simian lifetime. In other words, in a finite universe, do not count on an infinite monkey.
Wow. No wonder.
This was initially a college joke that everyone heard it.
Yeah.
That if you had it was actually the way I heard it was if you had an infinite number of monkeys with an infinite amount of time, they'd be able to type Shakespeare's plays. And it was never what do you, and so somebody actually takes it seriously and does a calculation, and then NPR plays it as news.
People wonder why their audiences are turning to podcasts. It seems pretty obvious to me. Filler. Bullcrap filler. Let's thank our executive and associate executive producers. We appreciate everybody who sends back value to the show. The way it works is very simple. We give you everything, all of us, all of me, all of John, all the time, our entire works to you, including show notes, not to be discounted, including every single clip we play, every story we've discussed. It's all in the show notes, noagendashow.net, which has enabled fantastic developments such as Bing it.io. You can search. You can search the transcripts. You can get clips. You can share stuff. All of it is there for you at no upfront charge. All we ask is if you get value from the show, send it back to us so that we can continue doing this work for you. And the value can come in many different ways. We love when people support us financially. We thank everybody $50 and above, and we implore all at some level to be able to set up a sustaining donation, noagendadonations.com, any amount, any frequency, whatever it's worth to you. We can't look in your pocketbook or wallet. Support the show. Keep us going for at least another 4 more years. And we start off by thanking our execs and associate execs. The way it works is $200 above, you get an actual credit, a show business credit, associate executive producer, which you can use anywhere where credits are accepted, like imdb.com or LinkedIn. Don't forget your pronouns. And $300 or above, you become an executive producer for that episode. Same holds true with your credit, and we gladly will read you your note. And we kick it off with someone who came in well above that executive producer level. Michael McClellan, with $1,000, and he added the fees, 3026, which is highly appreciated. And he says, good morrow and ITM fine sirs. I have just clicked submit on my PayPal donation, having been reeled in by JCD's clever newsletter wording for the doctorate program. Because of the option to cover PayPal fees, which I benevolently checked, my donation ended up being 1036.26, even though my payment method was switched to my checking account. As such, please switcheroo the extra to a monthly supporter of your choosing who is closest to knighthood in attempts to get them across the line 1 month sooner. Wow, was the back office able to do that?
Yes. Yes, Jay actually is organized enough to do it. Once that I discourage it, but she can do it.
Okay,
or she's done it a couple times now.
I also humbly request a dedouching, as I'm a longtime listener, first time caller, donator.
You've been dedouched.
Oh. Glad you came out of the woodworks, brother. That's very nice to have you here. I'd like to be known as Sir Michael, Knight of the Northern Mitten, for the avoidance of doubt. Michael, M-I-K-E-L, is pronounced the same as the phonetically retarded Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L. that's nice. Any Sharpton jingle, marriage, children, and grandchildren karma, and as much pomp and circumstance as you can muster, heavier on the pump. God bless Michael, he says.
R-E-S-P-I-C-T. You've got... karma.
Yes. God bless you too, Michael. Thank you so much.
Well, another $1,030 and 26-cent guy. This is Stuart Walton, parts unknown. Dear John and Adam, please find my donation for the doctorate in education. Please send an email. I have sent an email to notes at noagendashow.net, which is what you're supposed to do, with more details on what this is all for. Many thanks, Sir Stuart, the angry accountant in Stafford, England. And Jay puts a note on here that she did not receive this notes at noagendashow.net. So Stuart, send it again. We'll read it, or if it's necessary. Yes. On the next show is a make good.
And I think you might want to explain the doctorate, just so everyone understands what's going on here.
Yes, we're giving away this year's promotion is a doctorate in climate science studies, but it's a doctor of education. So you can be a PhD from last year, and then you can be a doctor of education for this go round, and you get a beautiful hand-designed diploma from the No Agenda show.
And is for climate science studies?
I think it's climate science studies,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and this can be observed as an actual doctorate?
You can do what you want.
That's exactly what I thought.
You can do what you want. If you want to put this on your resume, I would do it.
Absolutely. Oh, look who's up next. Oh, my goodness.
There's not ants on the mic. Yeah, Nussbaum.
Nussbaum!
It's a Nussbaum.
Nussbaum!
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 One of our archdukes, Archduke Nussbaum, comes in with $1,000 plus the fees for the 3026, and he says, another diploma? I'd be smart! And that's his note. Thank you, Sir Nussbaum.
Smart.
I'm glad to good to hear from you, brother. Hope all is well. He's been around for a long time.
He's always in on these promotions. I like that. Yeah, Sarah Gardner
is good
in Wilmington, North Carolina, 500. She has a switcheroo here, and this is a Commodore, I guess the last of them. Donation from my husband Tom. November 10th show day is his birthday.
Oh, how nice!
That's today.
Yes, it is.
Tomorrow's 11/11, and it's also Veterans Day. Please play the birthday biscuit jingle.
Yes.
They always give me a biscuit on my birthday.
As he's diabetic, and a virtual biscuit is probably better than the real thing.
Do we give him the executive producer credit as well, or just the Commodore donation? It's a little unclear.
What's the switcheroo Commodore donation? Let's just put the both names on there. It's easy enough.
Let me just add that. Make sure we do that. What? He comes in again? What is this now? Thomas Nussbaum again on the list?
Nussbaum. Akbar.
Thomas Nussbaum, Archduke, comes in again now with
He's a Grand Duke, isn't he?
Archduke.
As a Grand Duke, you wouldn't have the jingle.
Yes. Well, the jingle says Archduke, so I'll say Grand Duke. Yes, you're probably right. I am sure I'm remiss. Grand Duke Thomas Nussbaum with an additional 500. I'd like to apply to the committee. Is it too late? For my line of work, I go off-grid for some times. ITM.
He wants to be. In other words, he missed out on the Commodore donation, and he wants to. Okay, we'll put him. He's on the list. He's good.
Okay, good. Let me just double check. He's on the. Yes, he's on the list. Wow. Okay. He's really going on. Welcome back.
So
welcome
he was
back
off
to
the grid. So we've lost Nussbaum for how many shows? We don't know. At least a month.
No, years. He hasn't donated in years. I don't think.
That's true. Interesting. Yeah. He's been. I can't think of the Latin for it, but he's not been around.
But I do see him posting on social media sometimes. It's always some exquisite drink. he's a
bon vivant.
Yes, he's a bon vivant. He is indeed.
Sir Tyler in Anchorage, Alaska, comes in at $343.75. He says, keep up the great work. Tyler Systems, LLC, the up-and-coming AI technology company in Alaska that everyone has been talking about, is again supporting the show. Esteemed tech journalist emeritus John C. Dvorak said they do great work after all. Already, another producer has reached out to discuss a project over a productive 15-minute call. That's how it's done in Gitmo Nation. And we agreed any business we do together has to result in a kickback to the show. Agreed. All consider right. this a down payment on the opportunity. Ken, I still owe you an email, and I look forward to working together. Let's hoping Here's hoping to more success. We're continuing to explore building AI tools that help automate existing workflow.
All of a sudden, AI is great. I love AI.
At www.tylersystems.com. That's T-Y-L-E-R. Our tagline remains outsourcing problems and insourcing solutions. So we can afford the outrageous retainer, the Curry DeVore Consulting Group, CDCG, Biz Development Department quoted us. That's which I guess is quite high. Yours truly, Sir Tyler in Alaska.
Nice, Sir Tyler. Thank you. Sean Brown is in Harriman, Utah, 343-75. Switcheroo. Please credit my wife, Natalie, as the executive producer. Okay, that is done. Natalie is the executive producer. We both greatly appreciate the amygdala shrinking coverage of the M5M. Please play Donald Loves Nazis, one of my favorite jingles, but rarely played these days. You know what? I'm sorry. I should have been on this Donald Plays Nazis clip throughout the past year. Hadn't even considered it.
Donald loves Nazis. Donald loves Nazis. CNN say that he's KKK and he shouts Sieg Heil with it. Wow.
Hey! Nice. Nice.
It's a great clip.
It is.
Russell Healy in Lake Zurich, Illinois. 333.33, and he just says simply, keep going, please.
We will. And there's Sir Cal coming in from Lavender.
Lavender Blossoms.
Lavenderblossoms.org. There you go. Thank you. He's in Northville, Michigan, 249. He's an associate executive producer. And he says, happy birthday to all the Marines out there. That's right. The Marines celebrating there. What a birthday is it for the Marines? How many years have they been around? It's a long time.
A long time. Those guys have been around forever.
Yes.
They always give me a biscuit on my birthday.
There's a biscuit for the Marines. Sir Cal, a.k.a. Sergeant Nistor. I didn't know Cal was an ex-Marine. We do know.
Well, it looks like it.
Thank you, Sir Cal.
I wonder what he thinks of John Kelly.
They all hate him.
Sir Drywall in Petrolia, Ontario, Canada, 22970. Sir Drywall here of Walnut Ridge. Okay, can you believe 333.33 Scandinavian is only 229 USD?
Oh, we need to bump him up.
No, he's, he needs to be bumped up. You're right. I'm thinking the other way around.
You're bumped up, brother.
Nouse Drywall, by the way, of Petrolia, Ontario, is happy to support No Agenda Nation, but would like to ask the community to consider supporting my daughter, Dame Julia Weaver of Words First of the Nouse. Yeah. She has had a dream of being an author since she was 12, and now at 20 has reached the next stage of that dream by getting published in an anthology.
Ooh.
I would love it if the No Agenda community would consider purchasing a copy of her book through her website, www.julianaus.com. If you are unable to buy a book, consider sending her an ITM by email as an encouragement at author@julian, J-U-L-I-N-N-A-U-S, julianaus.com. Thank you for your ongoing excellent work, John and Adam. Dave.
Thank you, Dave. Annabelle Welch is next. Burien, Washington, 212. Hello. Thanks for the amazing content. I have been listening to your podcast for a few years with my dad, and it is my favorite. Best podcast in the universe. Requesting Goat Karma, Shut Up Slave. My great grandpa is turning 90 tomorrow. He is on the list. Sincerely, Annabelle Welch, who's 12. That's a very sweet gift for your grandpa. How nice is that? Yes, we'll give you a little Shut Up Slave and some Goat Karma for him, for you. We're happy to do it.
Shut up, slave.
You've got karma.
Zachary Johnson, Park Rapids, Minnesota. 210.60. Thank you to No Agenda, the Hangtown Fry of podcasts. Check out a lot of phosphorus in this podcast.
Yes.
Check out my hyperlocal podcast, Northwestern Voices, on YouTube, Spotify, or Podcast Addict.
All right. Addict. See, there it goes. Here come the hyperlocal podcast. That's looking good. Thank you, Zachary. Matthew Martell is in Broomall, Pennsylvania, 21060. Keep up this native. I'll keeping this native ad short. Visit martellhardware.com. That's with a double L. Use coupon code NOAGENDABUNDLE for an additional 10% off your order. Hey, all right. Thank you.
No agenda bundle.
What do you get? A hammer and a bunch of nails.
Sean McKeon. I think it's McKeon. In Glastonbury, Connecticut, 21060. In the morning, keep up the good work and incisive analysis. Adam,
yeah.
You were on target with your election predictions, but hopefully Trump wasn't handed an economy ready to tank. Two jingle requests. Trump's jobs, followed by it's true.
Okay, we got it.
Jobs.
That's true.
You've got karma.
And there, another Zachary. We have two Zacharys today. Zachary Johnson earlier, now Zachary Welt from Burien, Washington, where we had the Texans last week. Last show, it's the Washingtonians today. 202. Error 202 donation, he says, compared to shrink the amygdala request received, but processing is not completed. Read Mass Control by Jim Keith. Tip of the day for John. The Monica Perez show host is reading it on her pod for free. Well, there's a great tip.
What?
Monica Perez, the Monica Perez show, is reading the book Mass Control by Jim Keith on her pod for free.
Huh.
He's doing
probably a violation of somebody's copyrights.
I think so.
Yeah, why don't you get the next one and I have to go look at some email.
Sure. Anonymous, Clifton Park, New York, $200.47. I believe I've reached knighthood status. Status.
You sound like the guy from NPR.
Status in December 2023. But there's nothing better than delayed gratification. Like the gratification of 47 Savage after 4 years of insanity. Deduce if you must.
You've been deduced.
Thank you, John and Adam, and the entire No Agenda community for the amazing body of work. V for V is lit. Please knight me, Sir Dizzy Top of the Dusty Hills. And I'd like a jingle, which is John's Hot Pockets.
Hot Pockets.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Wow.
Yeah, that's nice.
Linda Lupatkin in Lakewood, Colorado comes in with $200 and says, hey, John, as you requested, I visited at instaheadshots.com and the photos look impressive, although I haven't personally tried their service. When it comes to including a photo on a resume, I recommend against it, as it takes up valuable space that could be better utilized to showcase achievements. However, the website could be an excellent resource for professional headshots for use on LinkedIn or a bio.
Yep.
Well, there you go.
All right.
Speaking of an excellent resource for a resume that gets results, go to imagemakersinc.com. That's imagemakersinc with a K.com and work with Linda Liu, Duchess of Jobs and writer of resumes. Jobs karma, please. Love you guys. Linda.
Jobs. Let's vote for Jobs. Utah.
And then we're getting to the end. Yes, actually, this is our last one. Associate Executive Producer Sir Tom and Dame Rhonda. And they sent in a note, a handwritten note. I see a card here. John and Adam, just a couple of weeks ago, the No Agenda Knight Sir Tom of the 1015 was given a special lapel pin by the U.S. Army to commemorate his meritorious service to America during the COVID pandemic. He's a civilian DOD employee in FEMA Region 4. We have not yet figured out how actually going into work throughout the pandemic exhibits courage, but here we are. Through means which we cannot discuss or disclose, Sir Tom has acquired official U.S. Army COVID courage pins for you both, and they are enclosed herein. We both agreed that if anyone needs to be officially appreciated and acknowledged for their courage during the dark times of COVID, it will be both of you. We appreciate you for keeping amygdala small, and we continue to be ever so thankful for your courage. 4 more years! Oh, and also included is a check to congratulate you both on 17 years of courage, ITM, Sir Tom and Dame Rhonda. You know, I would really love to have my pin.
I have to tell you this, and this is a fact. She only sent one pin.
Oh, that's a bummer. Is this like we had two barrels of wine and yours broke during the summer?
No, this was not like the, and then, by the way, it was a broken mug. they sent two mugs and one broke. It was yours.
Mine broke. Now I remember. But
no, the only one pin showed up, and I have to wonder. And when we checked the envelope, Jay and I both looked at it, and it was no way it got out of the envelope. So it wasn't like the gold coin somebody sent once. I won't say who. But so I don't know what to say.
No.
The pin is a weird looking thing. It's the smallest pin you can imagine.
Mm.
And it's like you'd have to know exactly what this pin is to recognize it on someone.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of it.
You can have mine if they don't have another one.
Oh, that's very kind. No, it's all right. I can always, next time I visit you, I can always look at it and touch it. And thank you very much to these producers, executive and associate executive producers who helped us out for show 1711. It is highly appreciated. Remember that these credits are welcome and useful anywhere show business credits are recognized. That's a lot of places, including IMDb.com. Thank you again for producing 1711.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Hot Pockets.
So the 4B movement, this is what we're talking about.
Yeah, the 4B movement.
Yes, the 4B. Now, this started in Korea, I believe.
Yep.
And this is a whole bunch. It's like some feminist movement, and it spilled over. And I don't know if it's really spilled over.
I thought
over.
It started by incel men in Korea. I don't know how this somehow morphed into a woman's movement.
Well, maybe it's been co-opted by the women here in America. And I'm not so sure this is. I mean, I have not seen. Maybe I need to go to Austin, but I haven't really seen any women with their heads shaved.
There's not
going to
be any in Fredericksburg or any place normal. There won't even be any around here.
I went to the vet the other day to pick up some stuff for Phoebe, and I always take her and we weigh her to see what she weighs. She's 97.4, which is good. She's down, and the girls there were like, are we celebrating? I said, what do you mean, Trump? And she's like, yeah, we're all so happy. It's all great. It feels fantastic. They were so happy. They're so happy around here. Fredericksburg is jubilant, I tell you.
Especially since the grid didn't go down.
Unlike what's been happening with the 4B movement. Let's learn more, shall we?
Since the election of Donald Trump, some American women on social media platforms like TikTok and Instagram have been showing an increasing interest in a social trend originating in South Korea called the 4B movement. Its proponents oppose dating men, having sex with men, marrying men, and having children with them.
Stop talking to the men. Delete, block, say your goodbyes, and leave it at that.
If you secretly had to vote for Kamala because of your husband, I just want you to know that it's okay to divorce him. We're building a whole community of ladies who are happy being single. And guess what? If your husband voted for Trump, especially if he knows that you didn't, he hates your guts. Come join us over here on this side. It's called the right side of history.
Posts shared in the last few days on TikTok. Sean Lay got more on the 4B movement from Ming Julie from Occidental College in Southern California.
Yeah. An English literal translation of it is no marriage, no relationship, no birth, and no sex. And it refers to a movement where some group of women, feminists, decided that they are fed up with the patriarchal system and the misogyny that was latent in Korean society for a long time, and that they are going to do something about it.
So I have a couple more clips about this, not very long, but I wonder, can this be classified in DSM-5 as some kind of mental illness where you do these types of things?
Probably.
It's had quite an impact, though, on social media, hasn't it? And now
social media
has translated to the United States. What's happening in America? Why is it being picked up there?
So in the U.S., after the election, some women, especially it seems like the women who are living in more red states, decided that actually they, similar to the Korean woman who felt like they couldn't trust the men in their lives, also couldn't trust the men who are in their lives or potentially the men who they might go out on dates with. So they decided that they were also going to refrain from the sexual relationships or dating with men until they can know actually that these men are men who can be trusted to honor, respect women and respect women's health.
Do you think this is also mandatory for trans women?
I think you're getting ahead of yourself.
Do they think then that white, black, Latino men who have voted for Donald Trump somehow become suspect to them, that they are not trustworthy?
Yes, because in some sense, it seems like the sexual misconduct allegations, as well as how big of an issue women's health and abortion rights was for this election, it seems the case that even if all the men who voted for Donald Trump are not opposed to abortion rights or opposed to women's rights or other things, that it seems to be the case that that is something that they are willing to kind of sideline in order to vote him into the office. So that is a factor.
Back in South Korea, what impact has 4B made?
There has been some change, but not necessarily in a good way. And that is one of the things that I'm partly concerned about for the 4B movement in the U.S. as well, because in Korea, this movement has been happening for quite a while. And the results that you see nowadays isn't necessarily like a lot of men saying that, oh, they're feminist now or that they believe in women's cause. It's more so the case that some men have become very radical anti-feminist as a reaction to the 4B movement. So it doesn't seem to be the case that on an individual level, it has changed men's perspective to be more like gender equal or feminist. It has gone in the other direction.
What did she just say?
Nothing.
I'm telling you, this to me seems like it's only a thing on social media. It's only a virtue signal thing. And what I have seen, a lot of very jubilant black women in America who are like, oh, we've had 1,000 orders for our $10 bracelet, blue bracelet, which is like money in the bank. It's like everyone's selling these blue bracelets now. It's like a big money maker.
And I think it's a great idea.
Do you worry that could happen in the United States too?
I do worry about that, because if there aren't any specific demands for legal reform or certain demands that the 4B movement are making, then it's kind of unclear to the men or the larger society that they're trying to send a message to what needs to be done in order for this movement to stop eventually.
God, I like the head shaving personally. I think that's funny.
Did you see the one that was bitching about having cancer and being lumped in with the other head shavers?
No, I didn't see that, but that doesn't surprise me.
She is irked.
Doesn't surprise me. Yeah. I like the head shaving. So we can identify.
These people just want to take themselves out of the gene pool. I think that's a benefit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So wear the blue bracelet and, you know, you can find, you know, somebody is sympathetic. I think it's like a warning sign. It's like, you know,
stay away.
Putting this, you know,
stay away.
A red A carving in your forehead.
I defy anyone in our vast listening audience to find as one of these either head shaven or blue bracelets and take a picture.
And there's also the blue tattoo.
What is the tattoo of?
Oh, okay, if you hold your right hand out and you go underneath the palm on the wrist, on the left hand part of the wrist, you tattoo a small blue heart.
Okay,
it's really small. It looks like a prison tattoo, is it? But really, maybe it's a quarter, a half inch big.
Okay, well, yay.
That also means that's permanent. It's more permanent than the cheap, you know, bracelet. You can take that off. Mm.
Wow. Okay. Yippee. Yippee.
Well, let's talk about the Trump-Musk bromance.
Okay. I'm glad you're tracking this. Things I'm not.
Somebody's got you.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I mean.
So let's go. Trump bromance.
President-elect Donald Trump gave a special shout out during his victory speech this week to the billionaire who has companies that make electric cars and shoot for the stars, Elon Musk.
We have a new star. A star is born, Elon.
Of course, Elon Musk is the richest man in the world. He owns several companies that could benefit from Trump's presidency. NPR's tech reporter Dara Kerr joins us. Dara, thanks for being with us.
Of course. Nice to be here.
We've seen this relationship grow right in front of our eyes. How did it get started?
Well, where is she from? She works for NPR?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Elon Musk
was introduced to somebody.
Has been a supporter of Trump for a while. But it was really in July when things got revved up. Right after that first assassination attempt on Trump, almost immediately, Musk posted on his social media platform, X, "I fully endorse President Trump and hope for his rapid recovery." And that's when the bromance between the two of them really took off. Musk started deeply fundraising for Trump and posting more and more pro-Trump content on X. At the same time, he was criticizing Vice President Kamala Harris. And in the last few weeks, Musk hit the campaign trail, speaking at Trump's rallies. In all, Musk has donated more than $100 million of his personal money to the campaign. And this has really earned him what seems to be a very close relationship with the president-elect.
And in addition to the benefits of friendship, what else could flow from this relationship?
Money.
It really boils down to all of the companies that Musk owns. Besides X, he has Tesla and SpaceX, the rocket company. He has Starlink, which is a satellite internet company, and even more. And many of these companies rely on government grants and subsidies. Tesla, for example, has gotten millions in government funding to install EV charging stations. And SpaceX has been awarded billion-dollar contracts from NASA for missions to the moon.
That's a minor nitpick. Starlink is a part of SpaceX. It's not a separate company, as far as I know.
Could be because it's a rocket. You need rockets.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it falls under SpaceX.
Could be. But that's nitpicking. It's good. And fucking, it's the way you go.
Thank you.
Okay, onward. Part two.
And so now there's some fears that he can get more contracts or that he may face less government scrutiny. I spoke to Geeta Johar. She's a professor at the Columbia Business School.
I think the government contracts could be given without much oversight to Musk, whether it's for SpaceX or whether it is for his satellite links. And that's lack of regulation, lack of oversight, all of which will serve to benefit Musk.
I should say the Trump campaign representatives from SpaceX and X and Musk himself did not respond to our request for comment. Just yesterday, Trump had a call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, and several major news outlets have reported that Musk was also on the call, though NPR has not independently confirmed those reports. Musk's satellite company Starlink has played a big role in providing internet access to Ukraine during the war.
And of course, didn't Donald Trump mention that he might put Elon Musk on some government commission?
Yes, he did. This first came up in August when Musk interviewed Trump during a live stream conversation on X. Musk told Trump that he should create a, quote, government efficiency commission. Shortly after that, Trump announced that he would create the commission and put Musk in charge, which is something that experts are saying could create a conflict of interest, because Musk could have some sort of influence over the agencies that are tasked with policing his companies. And a lot of Musk's companies are under some sort of federal investigation. We're talking inquiries by the Justice Department, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the Environmental Protection Agency, and so on. And with this quote, unquote, efficiency commission, both Musk and Trump have said they want to slash federal budget.
I think they're all missing the story here, but this is all I hear. Oh, he's going to get some kind of, you know, deals with it. He's already got all the deals. He's got all the space deals. It's an arm of the U.S. government at this point. He's a military contractor.
Yep.
And what is he running? He can't run. He's on X the whole time. He's hanging out with Trump, making phone calls. How can he run any company? Someone else is running all this.
Well, let's go to the last clip and see if there's any season of reveal material.
At rallies, Trump has hailed Musk as the, quote, secretary of cost cutting. And Musk has said he wants to cut $2 trillion from the federal budget. That's nearly a third of the budget.
Something that has puzzled me, because, of course, Elon Musk has a huge investment in electric vehicles.
Right.
Donald Trump used to hate EVs, didn't he?
Yes, yes. But now he really seems to be on board with them. And Trump has been giving Tesla real shout-outs in his rallies. In August, Trump said that he was all in for electric cars. And then he said, quote, "I have to be, you know, because Elon endorsed me very strongly." So, Scott, it's really hard to tell what's going to happen come January. But there's no doubt that we are going to keep hearing about this very public relationship between the president of the United States and the world's richest man.
And NPR's Derek Kerr, thanks so much.
Well, no, there was not much of the season of reveal there. I think the thing that's being, there's a couple things that could happen. I could see, this is an odd off the wall thought, I could see X being nationalized as one.
Twitter?
Yeah.
Why would you nationalize Twitter?
Yeah, so it just becomes...
Well, that would get him out from under.
Yes. So that just becomes, you know, with his whole Section 230, and it could be like the actual town square, and everybody uses that, which would fall right in line with not so much the cryptocurrency policy that Trump has promised. We'll see. At the Bitcoin conference, he said that there would be a strategic Bitcoin reserve, which includes every Bitcoin that the U.S. government has seized, which I think is 250,000, and that the United States would be purchasing 200,000 Bitcoin every single year to add to the reserve. Of note is that Bitcoin went over 81,000 today.
Yeah.
Thanks, Trump. But, you know, in Elon's Be Everything app, I've always thought that, you know, Trump made a secondary announcement. He said, well, there's the Bitcoin reserve, but he wants to enhance the use of the stable coin. And stable coins is very interesting for a guy like Trump, because you can issue stable coins, which are backed by treasuries and some Bitcoin, but I think treasury, you know, Tether is probably the largest purchaser of U.S. debt at this point. It's a great way to kind of print money without really printing it, if you know what I mean.
You think it's a workaround?
I think it is, yeah. I think it's some kind of workaround. And then, you know, X would be the everything app. You buy everything through X. Maybe you nationalize it. You know, make it the place. Make it like the phone company. You know, get some telco rules in there. Since no one's talking about it, I'm suspicious. It feels like that there's something with X that may be some of Elon's end game just for this. I mean, he's got everything else. He doesn't have to worry about his contracts and the EVs, whatever. I just think it's a possibility.
Well, put it in the red book, people.
It is in the red book. Now, the big question, of course, since COP16 just ended, that is the Biodiversity Conference. And we're now on to COP29. But this COP is in Baku, home of the oil industry, in Baku. And, well, we've got some questions.
So Trump won. Here are three potential implications for the climate fight. One, amplified climate denial. At least one in 10 Americans doesn't believe climate change is real. Trump called the climate crisis one of the greatest scams of all time. His views empowers others to follow suit and diss climate science. Two, fossil fuel expansion. The U.S. is already the world's largest oil and gas producer. On the campaign trail, Trump promised to boost domestic energy resources to lower fuel prices. Three, policy reversal. Domestically, Trump said he would gut current climate subsidies that have injected billions into electric vehicles and clean energy. Internationally, he could pull the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement, as he did in his first term. Experts are concerned about what this could mean for the global fight against climate change.
Yes, that's the Deutsche Welle report. France 24 views it similarly.
He has referred to climate change as a hoax, and experts warn that his second term in office could pose a serious threat to the planet.
We will drill, baby, drill. We're going to drill.
According to the New York Times, Trump's transition team is planning to reduce the size of some national monuments to enable more drilling and mining.
National monuments?
What?
Yeah, according to the New York Times, Trump's going to reduce the size of some national monuments? Like Mount Rushmore? What?
No.
What national monuments?
Well, the Washington Monument in Washington, D.C., that big obelisk or whatever it's
drill
called.
There. Maybe they mean...
drill there?
What's I don't going know. On? I don't know.
Well, you should be explaining it in these articles. You should be an expert after reading the article, but apparently not.
According to the New York Times, Trump's transition team is planning to reduce the size of some national monuments to enable more drilling and mining.
I think what he's referring, what they're referring to, is the parks, the national monument parks.
Oh.
They can reduce the size of the park,
yeah.
And on the outer edges or wherever they want to, they can do some drilling.
Okay.
The team has drawn up executive orders on withdrawing from the landmark Paris Climate Agreement. The New York Times also states. Under Trump's previous presidency, the U.S. pulled out of the agreement before Joe Biden reversed the move during his time in office.
Finance plan.
Some experts fear the deal's goal of limiting global warming to below 1.5 degrees Celsius could become near impossible during Trump's next term. New York Times also reported that Trump aims to do away with a waiver that allows California and other states to have firmer pollution standards. Trump's re-election will likely loom large over COP29, set to open on Monday in Baku.
All right, so it's opening up Monday in Baku, and let's get the propaganda rolling, everybody.
Europe's Copernicus Climate Agency is saying 2024 will be the hottest year on record.
Oh,
and Crystal Gomansing has the details from London. She's been looking through that report and can tell us more about the very stark warnings it contains. Good morning, Crystal.
Good morning, yeah, Heather. Baby. Yes, I was speaking with Carlo Buontempo. He is the director of Copernicus Climate Change Service, and he said, quote, he is virtually certain, based on all of the data, that 2024 will be the warmest year on record.
Yeah,
now that builds on the fact that 2023 was previously labeled as the warmest year on record. So that is sort of one of those dire situations that are being shared with us today. But we're also being told that scientists have found that global temperatures for the past 12 months were 1.62 degrees higher than levels recorded at the start of the Industrial Revolution. So why is that key? Well, you might recall that number 1.5, keep 1.5 alive. That was the number that global scientists have been using for years, telling leaders that they have to keep the level of warming to that number or around there in order to protect the environment, to limit those extreme weather events, and assure there isn't a rapid rise in temperatures.
We have to protect the environment. Bring back the bikinis.
Due to climate change.
And then the final clip is from our very own favorite Secretary General of the United Nations, who loves these trips. He was just in Colombia for the COP down there. Now he's going to Baku for the COP. I mean, the guy is so busy. He's very busy. And I took out all of his, you know, all of his nonsense up front, because what do you think he's really going for right now? What is the one thing that's lacking from all of these COP meetings?
Good restaurants?
Money.
The gap between the funds
money.
Needed.
It's always about
money. We need more money, and it's got to come from the IMF and the World Bank.
The gap between the funds needed for adaptation and the funds available to developing countries is set to reach up to $359 billion a year by 2030.
You got to get some of that money flowing, people.
We need urgent action in four areas. First, new national climate action plans, or NDCs, must set out adaptation planning, financing, and implementation needs clearly informed by high-quality data.
I want to drink your blood.
Second, every person on Earth must be protected by an effective early warning system by 2027.
Early warning system? Oh, what is this effective early warning system? What would that be? Hey, It's going to be hot today. It's called the weather report, dude.
In line with United Nations early warnings for all initiatives. Mm. Third, a massive increase in adaptation finance from public and private sources.
More finance.
Every country must have the means to protect themselves from climate extremes. And seize the benefits of adaptation to drive progress across the sustainable development goals.
Okay.
We need developed countries to double adaptation finance to at least $40 billion a year by 2025.
What?
An important step to close the finance gap. We need to unlock a new climate finance goal at COP29 and to build on.
What does that mean, unlock a new finance goal? These guys are only trying to bilk money.
From the American taxpayer,
yes,
I might
us,
add.
From us.
We need to unlock a new climate finance goal at COP29 and to build on the Pact for the Future by driving action on debt and substantially increasing the lending capacity of the multilateral development banks and their potential to leverage far more private finance. Today's report estimates that developing countries outside China are spending more on debt interest payments than they need for adaptation.
Yeah.
Outside of China.
Yeah, right.
Strike the heart of the crisis.
But they're not going to call out China. They're going to call out the U.S.
House gases. The G20 must lead global efforts to cut emissions 9% a year to 2030, phase out fossil fuels fast and fairly, and accelerate the renewables revolution so that we limit global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius. The climate crisis is here. We can't postpone protection.
In your ear.
We must adapt now.
The climate crisis is in your ear. Oh. The sooner we get rid of this nonsense, the better, too.
That's not good luck. No one seems to be able to.
Well, because there's too much money. Everyone loves the money.
That's the point. Yeah. When I make money.
Due to climate change.
Without doing any work, by the way.
Yes. Traveling. Very hard meetings.
Not traveling.
Traveling meetings.
I'd be remiss if I don't play my latest AI clip.
Okay. And you want to set it up?
This is Biden on a phone call with Obama.
These never work so well if you don't see the video, but okay.
It's got good voices.
Okay.
Tough break for Cammy, huh?
You just started a war.
No, I just finished one.
I am going to do everything in my power to end you.
Listen here, I've been around a lot longer than you.
Yeah, no shit.
You never understood how this really works. You were always a good soldier for them, but not me. I didn't get plucked out of nowhere like you did. I spent 40 years hiding skeletons for those fucks.
I knew you were fucking stupid, but this is insane. You really don't know the enemies you just made. We are going to erase you from history.
Oh, like I give a fuck, I've made my bed. I'll lay in it.
Oh, John.
I know my family is protected. How about yours? How long do you think before investigations start? How long do you think you'll stay useful to them? Besides, give yourself some credit. You were the one that dared him to run. But now I gave him the Oval Office. How about you?
Joe, what the fuck did you do?
I don't remember. I'm just a crazy old man, right?
Did you make a deal with him?
Like I said, my family's protected. Hold on, I got someone who wants to talk to you.
Hello, Barry. It's been quite a long time, hasn't it?
This isn't fucking over.
I'm not an idiot, Barry. I just play one on TV.
You know, here, remember, $150 billion is being invested.
So
that you can play clips. The only reason why it's supposed to be funny is because they drop F-bombs.
They could do a better job of cutting those out. I agree with that. I don't think they need to be cussing like, although they probably do that in private
Even be a little bit funny if it wasn't that. It's just the voices aren't that great. It's better with the video. Where's your Tech Grouch TikTok channel?
It's coming.
All right. Well,
coming soon.
Not AI, but since we're talking about Joe's family being protected, the question was posed to Karine Jean-Pierre Abdul-Jabbar.
Does the president intend to pardon any administration officials or people that Trump has threatened with any sort of legal actions? He's got 74 days, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I know pardons is going to be a big part of the questions that I get here over the next several weeks and
couple of months that we have. I don't have anything to share or any thought process on pardons. Once we have something to share, we certainly will share that.
Secondly, his son, Hunter, is also up for being sentenced next month. Does the president have any intention of pardoning him?
We've been asked that question multiple times. Our answer stands, which is no.
So, not going to pardon Hunter. According to sources say, Jean-Pierre said it right there.
Well, then Trump will do it.
Yeah, because Joe did help him. And let's be honest. Joe did him a solid with the Kamala nomination.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sure he's well aware.
Yeah. Have you heard these calls for Biden to step down early so that Kamala...
Well, you brought this up once already.
Yeah. No. That was about 25th Amendment. But I think I saw something.
I've given this some thought, by the way.
Okay, and what's your thought?
I think he won't do it because he doesn't want to look like a quitter. And it would be good. It would be funny because it would take out from the Democrats the woman first woman president card that they like to run on. If they want to win one of these days, using that as their motivation. Even though it hasn't paid off yet, but someday it might. And so by making Kamala the 47th president for maybe just a month, that would pull the rug out from under all the Democrats' strategies for the future. And then Trump would become number 48.
I have not vetted this, but it's pretty short. This is from CNN from this morning, I think.
Is looking for. That is my question. I'll start with you.
Joe Biden's been a phenomenal president. He's lived up to so many of the promises he's made. There's one promise left that he could fulfill, being a transitional figure. He could resign the presidency in the next 30 days, make Kamala Harris the president of the United States.
Whoa.
He would absolve
wow.
him from being able to have wow. to oversee the January 6th
gosh, we never thought of that,
right,
Bill.
Of her own defeat. And it would make sure that it would dominate the news at a point where Democrats have to learn drama and transparency and doing things that the public want to see is the time. This is the moment for us to change the entire perspective of how Democrats.
Okay, this has now jumped from an internet meme to a Sunday morning show.
Jamal's out here right now. Congratulations. Season of House of Cards.
Well, it would certainly be entertaining.
It would be. I just don't see Biden doing it. He's irked enough. He doesn't want to give her the. Because the fact that she jumped on this whole thing the way she did and was partly responsible for stabbing him in the back, I think that he wouldn't allow it. He just wouldn't do it. He's not that, no.
Well, in all of this, the conclusion...
It's not Biden.
No. The conclusion for today is that there seems to be no strategy from the media or their Democrat Party handlers on, you know, how to start going after Trump. There just seems to be nothing.
I think you're right. I think you've come up with one that needs to be focused on, and we'll start to see. It'll start to emerge. It'll be revealed.
Which one is this?
We start to see repetitive things like we've noticed with, I noticed with the Latinx thing. They're trying, you know, to try to get that out of the lexicon, out of the lexicon. And so there'll be something we're going to see. Each of us are going to see it. Repeated at least twice or three times, and then we're going to both, I believe, at the same time, identify how the targeting is going to work.
Okay. You said I had identified something already, and I misunderstood.
No, I said I identified the Latinx thing. Saying that the two of us working with this in mind, that there's a targeting aspect to Trump that we haven't figured out. That it'll start to appear, and we'll both spot it around the same time since we're looking for it.
I'm going to show my support by donating to No Agenda. Imagine all the people who could do that. Oh yeah, that'd be fab.
Yeah, on No Agenda in the morning.
Well, there you know. There you have it. We will be on the lookout
for you. The more you know.
The more you know, the more you know. And of course, the producers out there, you are expected to contribute to this quest as well, because something has got to show up eventually. Right now, though, what's showing up is the producers who supported the show financially, $50 and above, and John is going to thank them right now.
Yeah, starting with Sir GK, Gary Casper in Tulsa, Oklahoma, $150.47. And he's we put this at the end, some retirement karma for Colonel B. Switching to B. Oh, Sir Old IT Guy in Reno, 105.35. And he says, excellent show, 1710. That was the last show.
Well, thank you.
That's the one that pulled him in. Pulled him in.
It sure
Carl
did.
In London, UK, $100. And it's toward his dad's knighthood. Happy birthday. He's got a listing there. Kevin McLaughlin in Concord, North Carolina, 8008. The boob donation from the Archduke of Luna, lover of American boobs. He's probably a Grand Duke by now. Scott, and it's 8008. Scott Rusing, in Newport, Kentucky, 75. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
A little early there.
He's not planning on donating for the rest of the year. Wow. That's obvious. Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Karen Fatula in St. Clairsville, Ohio, 7337. Sir Mainframe in Ventura, California, 64. Mark Hardwick in Aledo, Texas, 6006. Parcel Pusher. Federal Express man in Apex, North Carolina, 5711. Doesn't mention his name. Brittany Miller in Trinidad, Colorado, 5272. Saumitra Saravana in Fredericksburg, Virginia. You must know her, 5272.
No, she's in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Oh, sister city. Brady Kessler in Lee's Summit, Missouri, 5272. These are all $50 donors that have been paid the extra fee. Bad Idea Supply. Look it up. It's on the internet. Just search Bad Idea Supply. They make all kinds of burning gear, which I guess is a bad idea with some people. 50-50. Colin Pettit in Fairfield, Iowa, 5047. And the following four lone people are $50 donors, and I'll just read their name and location. We're starting with William Kidwell in Dover, Delaware, William Spain in Springdale, Arkansas, Michelle Petty in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and Stephen Schumach in Xenia, Ohio. And those are our producers and helpers and executive producers and everybody in between that made show 1711 a distinct possibility. And here it is.
That's right. This is the show. And thank you to those who came in under $50 for reasons of anonymity. We never read those. And obviously, we have our sustaining donors. Consider setting up a sustaining donation yourself. Go to noagendadonations.com. Any amount, any frequency, it is all highly appreciated. We love it. The value for value model lives on. You keep it going on. Here's some goat karma for those who need it.
You've got karma.
Once again, noagendadonations.com. We actually have a few entries in all categories today, including our birthdays. Sarah Gardner, which is her husband, Tom Gardner. Very happy birthday. He is celebrating today. Annabelle Welch, happy birthday to Grandpa, turning 90. Happy birthday, Grandpa. And Carl from London says happy birthday to his dad, Jeff of Scotch Valley. And that's our list. Happy birthday from everybody here. The best podcast in the universe. Now, actually, I was incorrect. We don't have any titles, but we do have a number of doctors of education. So I'm going to congratulate our new graduates, Michael McClellan, Stuart Walton, and Thomas Nussbaum. All of you now have received doctorates in science. This is for media deconstruction of climate change studies. Or something like that. Congratulations, all.
Doctor of Education.
Doctor of Education. That's right. In climate change studies. I was too confused by the music. The band was just killing me. We also have two Commodores who we'd like to welcome. Our Commodores. This is the final Commodores of the entire list. And we have Just Under the Wire. Commodore Tom Gardner and Commodore Thomas Nussbaum arriving. Wow, man, what a show. What a show, John. I can't believe all these titles, everything just flying out. And on top of all that, we've got two knights. So let's bring them up to the round on the pit. Beautiful. There
he is, Michael McClellan, once again, an anonymous. Both of you supported the No Agenda show in the amount of $1,000 or more. Therefore, you're here at the roundtable. I'm very proud to pronounce thee as Sir Michael Knight of the Northern Mitten and Sir Dizzy Top of the Dusty Hills. For you, gentlemen, no special requests. So, of course, we have hookers and blow. We've got cigars and prostitutes, rent boys and Chardonnay. We have harlots and Haldol, pepperoni rolls and pale ales. We've got redheads and rye. We've got beers and blunts, Brazilian hotties and cachaça. How about some vodka and vanilla, bong hits and bourbon, sparkling cider and escorts, ginger ale and gerbils, best milk and pablum, and as always, there's the mutton and the mead. Everybody who we've mentioned today can go to noagendarings.com. That's where you can give us the information for your Commodore documentation or for your doctor of education in climate change science, climate change studies, I should say, noagendarings.com. And, of course, our two brand new knights can go there as well and take a look at that very, very handsome No Agenda Knight ring. It's a signet ring. That means you get some wax with it to seal your important correspondence with. And in addition to that, a certificate of authenticity. And welcome and thank you all for supporting the No Agenda show.
No Agenda Media.
First responders of No Agenda Nation are the people you meet at these No Agenda meetups. This is where you get connection. It is a big part of your protection. You need to go to one of these, and you could always try sending us a report. We love playing them. Fort Wayne, Indiana had a meetup.
Adam and John, this is Shannon in Fort Wayne. We had a good turnout, and instead of investing with Wall Street, try Zelensky. You get about 3% return a month, about 33% a year.
Good morning, John and Adam, Sir PBR Street Gang. We are celebrating the 35th anniversary of the Wall coming down in Berlin.
Dame Trinity having a great time in Fort Wayne. Thank you for your courage.
Oh, this is awesome, guys. This will be a really good report. Way to go.
Okay. Way to end your report. Beautiful. There's a meetup going on right now in Glendale, Arizona. The Westgate Chicken and Pickle is where you can meet everybody for the West Valley Entomophagy Association. That is underway now as we speak. Also, Longview's mid-month monthly meetup, the Election Hangover Edition, just starting up. In about 20 minutes at Rotolo's Pizzeria in Longview, Texas. Dirty Jersey Whore is hosting that. You got to meet him and his wife. On Monday, the Springfield Mo meetup, 6 o'clock at Blair's All-American Sports Bar and Grill, Springfield, Missouri. And on Thursday, our next show day, that'll be the 14th, the Central Ohio Election Hangover meetup, 6 o'clock at O'Malley's Pub, Palmer Lake, Colorado. Man, there's a lot on the list to come in the next month, all the way through December into January. I suggest you go take a look at noagendameetups.com. That's where you can select by location or just look at the entire list. You might even want to travel there. And the cool thing is, if there's not one near you, if you've never been to a meetup, you can start one yourself. It's really easy. NoAgendaMeetups.com. Always guaranteed a party.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. You want to be where you want me, triggered or held to blame. You want to be where everybody feels the same. It's like a party.
Yeah, we got a lot to come still. We have our end of show mixes, and we're very excited, as always, about a new tip of the day from John. But first, we need to determine what we're going to play at the very end of the show. This is our ISO moment. I have three, and it appears you have three. Would you like to go first?
I should have four.
You do have four. I'm sorry. Yes, you have four.
Would you like to play your three?
No.
It's fine.
No, I don't know. Well, how did that get in there? That's no good. Hold on. This is one that's good.
I want more money.
Yeah. Okay. And my final offering.
The power of the podcast.
There you go.
If it wasn't so muddy, it'd be good.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I got some muddy. I got some good. I brought back the Oy Vey, but let's start with full self.
Full self.
I'm my full self.
Okay, well, then we have the Oy Vey rerun.
Oy Vey, such a podcast.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Then we have thanks.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
And then we have yuppers.
Yep, yuppers and fabulous.
I like that one the best, honestly.
Okay.
Well, yup, yuppers, fabulous. Come on. That's exactly what our show is. Yup, yuppers, yeah, and fabulous. Go. It's yep. good. That's yep, right. Yuppers. And to prove it, here it is once again, our favorite moment of the show, John Soup of the Day.
Great advice for you and me. Just the tip with JCB. And sometimes Adam.
All right. So this one's actually another Mimi tip, although it's a tip I asked her to give me because of these products that she uses, these reusable food storage bags. So I was like, yeah, well, how's okay. that interesting?
Yeah, how's that interesting? Reusable food storage bags.
These are pretty cool. They're like made, they're not just like, you know, a Glad bag that's like super thick, made out of silicone. It's got no dangerous chemicals in it. But they have a Ziploc thing that's huge. And they're dishwasher safe, and they're like a substitute for a lot of other kinds of uses. And I'm going to read from her note. Ideatech is one of the brands you look for. Larine is another brand you look for. And she says, I'm trying a couple of brands. There are a lot of brands of all about the same price. They cost, you know, they're not cheap. A few different styles. Silicone reusable food storage bag. That's the key words. Silicone reusable food storage bags. The idea is great. Thick silicone bags that you can reuse. They never leak. You can wash them in the dishwasher. And instead of using disposable bags, it cuts down on waste. For all you out there that are green. I've had my first set of trial Larines for about 4 months. I have washed them dozens of times. Absolutely no difference between new and used. The second set, first listed, Ideatech have more rounded corners so they don't quite hold as much, but they're easier to clean. I also bought an assortment. They freeze well and don't get weird after being frozen. The only drawback that I see for extended storage is a label would be a good idea because if you write on them, you know, with a Sharpie, it's going to be there forever. You're going to have these bags for years. So it's a product that is a clear winner for the environmentally conscious.
Tina has these. She has these.
She does?
Yes, she does. I don't know which brand, but she does have them. I'm a Ziploc guy. I grew up with Ziploc. I stick to Ziploc. I'm a brand loyal to Ziploc.
Well,
Ziploc. No, I know, but I like throwing it out afterwards.
Okay, you're a wasteful type. Yes.
I like throwing out my bags. Thank you very much. No, tipoftheday.net for John's Tip of the Days.
Great advice for you and me. Just the tip with JCB. And sometimes Adam.
And find them also at noagendafun.com. And there's a lot more stuff on noagendafun.com. All right, everybody, on the lookout now. How are they going to try and thwart the presidency of Donald Trump? Let us know. Email us. Just email me. You can't spell Dvorak, so it's easier. We all know it. You all know
email
it.
Email me, too. But
we have a classic Kermit end-of-show mix. We also have D's Laughs. And David Kekta, all checking in with our No Agenda end of show mixes. We appreciate your time and talent as always. And if you don't mind, come on back on Thursday, whatever is going on in the world. And I guarantee you there will be something to look at and to deconstruct. We'll be all over it as usual at your service. Up next on noagendastream.com and on your modern podcast apps, just two good old boys. Hey, That's Sir Gina's on that show. It's always fun to listen to. Coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country, right here in Fredericksburg, Texas. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I'm saying rebuke, the masked singer. I'm John C. Dvorak.
We return on Thursday right here on No Agenda. Remember us at noagendadonations.com. Adios, mofos, ahooey, hooey, and such.
About Russia, what Trump is trying to hide. Conway and Spicer say things are nicer than what they're willing to confide. So many dudes think that this is just fake news. I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday we'll find it, the Russia connection.
the Donald, the Putin, and the Florida.
Vance was too agreeable, should have said you effed up your state, but Tim Walz is mean face, he's got those bug open eyes. If rallies between two candidates matter, Trump has all the size. Him saying he was friends with some school shooter, saying it a second time, made tampon Tim look like a doofus, shown ironically as a dude with body positivity. His wife turning pages and crazy high fives are weird to see. What do you think will be the October surprise, from the Brad Summer to the Mirror Fall? I do believe I despise maybe SNL being funny again. At least they nailed Kamala with that whole wine drunk connection. Hard to watch programming with celebrities spouting lies. Houses built on money from the powers be is what I despise. Start speaking facts, work out to your max, quit paying tax, stop faking the jacks, stop counting racks and being so lax. Eat more healthy snacks. Whatever you do, seal up your personal cracks. Hey, fact shedding was facts. Stop getting vaxxed, cosplaying with masks.
It's no sweat off my balls.
Younger people having more strokes and heart attacks. Recovering from long COVID and covering from masking facts and jury tracks. Watch out for these new election hacks. Toronto Dominion machines notoriously leaked and hacked. October surprise every 4 years around this time. Hope and change was awake. 2024, it's a vibe, but maybe SNL being funny again. At least they nailed Kamala with that whole wine drunk connection. We're in this new attention economy. Ads are running nonstop and getting mentioned on socials. The new currency.
I can imagine what can be and be unburdened by what has been.
Here in Maricopa County and in Arizona, in general, we have very close races. We're sort of closely divided between Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. So that means these big races, like for President, U.S. Senate, Governor, things like that, typically will be very close, and the networks are not in a position to call them on election night. But you're right, 10 to 13 days is what it has taken now on average for decades.
How badly did Democrats lose to Trump, James?
Some stats to just illustrate how significant this was. This is the biggest shift rightward from one election to the next since Ronald Reagan's victory in 1980. Donald Trump's on track right now to get 312 electoral votes. That's the most of any Republican since 1988. Donald Trump is on track right now to win the popular vote, the first Republican to do so since George W. Bush in 2004, which he did not do either time. And he's going to become the first ex-president since Grover Cleveland won in 1892 to take back the job. So Kamala Harris is going to end up getting more than 10 million fewer votes in 2024 than Joe Biden got in 2020. It really is a lot of votes.
Adios, mofo.
Dvorak.org/NA.
Yep, yuppers and fabulous.